If you make that little oof noise every time you stand up, yeah, that's your knees talking. Go see Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief covered by Medicare, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
It is a Sunday morning, and welcome to it. I'm Wendy Snyder, and we are looking at a really gray day. However, that is supposed to change. I was talking to Dave Schwann in the kitchen this morning, and not only are you my sunshine, Dave Schwann, but you told me sunshine would be coming out later.
A little later on, partly sunny skies today, and I'm looking at the radar as we speak, and things are slowly moving out, moving into Michigan. They're moving northeast. So perhaps by the time we're done with the show today, we'll see some sunshine out there.
Yay!
It's going to be cooler, too, and less humid. That's coming up.
I know. I like that as well. And look who's in the sports lounge today, Charlie Remeliotis. Hello.
Well, what's up, Wendy? It's great to be on a show with you where we're not catching each other in passing, where you're passing it off to my Blackhawks pregame show, and I'm not on via phone, so it's great to see you in the flesh.
I know. I didn't think you were a real person.
I do, in fact, exist. I am not a ghost.
Yeah, I did meet you one time, I think. One time you came in the studio to do a crosstalk. I was in for Lisa or something, and we were going into the Blackhawks, and you were there. But yes, it's so nice to see you. We're going to have some fun this morning. We're going to just talk about so many different things. Also, hello to Eli Burke, our producer.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right. Let's talk about the weather because Eli just showed me a video. I'm a little bit neurotic when it comes to tornadoes. I'm not really sure why. And I wonder if it's the Wizard of Oz watching that when I was younger. I wonder if that has something to do with it. Cause I'm
I never
also
thought about that.
Yeah. Because I'm also afraid of flying monkey men. So that could be where my fear of tornadoes comes from as well. But all right, so they brought back WGN TV brought back Tom Skilling because it was going to be a big one. He was sitting at home, and I know this is terrible, and Tom would answer my question. I wondered if he had pants on because he was from the waist up all looking great, you know, dressed up and ready to roll. And I mean, he had pants on, but I'm wondering if he had shorts or something. That's what I thought of. So he was covering everything. Demetrius Ivory was working his butt off. I had the radio on. I had the TV on. I had my phone all charged. I become crazy when there are storms. And I think the second night was worse. It's all rolling into one now. There were two nights we had it pretty badly. And what night did you take that video, and would you describe what had happened? Because, gosh, Eli, that's crazy.
Yeah, so the video I showed you before the show, I took on the first night of those storms.
And I know. Was it Tuesday and Wednesday? I don't even remember. See, we moved forward.
That sounds right. It might have been Tuesday night, and outside my window in my apartment, it looks over to like a patio section. And I live down here in the city where the weather didn't hit us too bad, but there were strong winds everywhere. And I'm sure there were other videos that went out on social media that went viral of like pool chairs and deck furniture flying off of rooftops. That was similarly happening at my building. I was filming, someone had left their hat on the ground on the patio. I was filming the hat like flying around on the deck, and then it got swarmed underneath a pile of chairs and benches.
They just were flying. And listen, I know there are people who say, yeah, the tornadoes can't come downtown. Yes, they can.
They totally can.
I know. Not like they're welcome, but it's been rumored that because of the tall buildings and, you know, because of the lake. But Tom Skilling and Demetrius, I've asked everyone because I'm a weather nerd, and they for sure can. It was a couple years ago, I think, Schwani, there was a tornado warning siren going off downtown.
Yes. Yes, there was. I've heard them recently. Didn't hear them the other night, but did hear them in the last couple of years. And don't forget, Miami was hit a number of years ago, right in the middle of the city with a tornado.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Because people really say that, they happen in the plains of Illinois.
Well, typically, yes, but they can affect cities also.
Well, someone said to me that, it's flatland, so the tornadoes go there. I said, they're not like, radaring in, looking down, going, oh, there's some flatland. I think I'll touch down there. They'll go wherever. So what was the biggest F measurement we had on a tornado? I know you said Maryville got hit.
Yeah, an EF2, and I believe there was an EF3 elsewhere in northwest Indiana, I believe around Coutts, Indiana. Streeter, Illinois got hit also with an EF2 or an EF3. And we have no reports of any fatalities, minor injuries. A lot of destruction, though. 200 and some homes damaged or destroyed in Merrillville and elsewhere also, all through the area. Tens of thousands are still without power. They'll be maybe in some areas without power for another day or two.
That is, I can't even imagine it, because it was so hot and muggy, and without having air conditioning, I know we're spoiled, but I am so sorry to all the people who are still without power, and I know they're working hard to get things. I was bummed out because I wanted a sausage sandwich from Bona Beef, and, the lights knocked it out. Like, what am I going to do now?
Oh, now you've got me hungry for a beef and sausage combo.
Oh, you do the combo,
once
huh?
Once in a while, yeah.
I don't really like to mix my meat, typically, except for pastrami and corned beef.
Very seldom, but definitely a beef or a sausage, you bet.
My high school boyfriend had a system down, people. He would buy a combo sandwich, which is a beef with a sausage in it, and then he would get a gravy sandwich on the side, take the sausage off the beef, and the gravy sandwich was probably like 25 cents. So it's like two sandwiches, bonus. Somebody's going to do that tonight. I know it. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we have a plethora of things we're going to roll through today. It's Sunday morning. It's me, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Yeah, we're seeing the rain today. It is supposed to clear up. We were talking about these storms. Good morning, by the way. It's Wendy Snyder here. And we were talking about the tornadoes. And Shwani, I was listening to you say the EF scale, and I thought it was just an F scale, but I had to look it up and find this out. I did know it was the Fujita scale.
Right.
And then in 2007, the U.S. National Weather Service now uses the enhanced Fujita scale. So that's where the EF comes from, which correlates damage to estimated 3-second wind gusts and incorporates better structural engineering standards. And I guess the highest is the EF5.
EF5 is the highest, and you just don't want to be there for that.
I know, but you don't.
You don't want to be there for any of them, but the EF5, that's catastrophic.
But even like an EF1 is moderate. There is an EF0, by the way. But wind speed 65 to 85 miles per hour, that's pretty rapid.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It is pretty rapid. And the size of these tornadoes also, you'll see the skinnier ones, the cone-shaped ones, and then you'll see some of them referred to as a wedge tornado. They're wider looking and wider in diameter, perhaps. That's what we were seeing the other night. Especially through, south of Chicago, like I said, around the Streeter area, and also in northwest Indiana. Dwight got hit also.
Yes. All right, so listeners are texting in. Tom Skilling said on the air that he had been in his robe all day and had to change when they asked him to go on the air. So that is good to know. God, I love that man so much. And someone else said, I am not giving Alyssa Donovan any credit, and you're right. I need to give her credit where credit is due, because she was on along with Demetrius Ivory. It was, and Morgan Kochmeyer was handling things earlier. They do such a good job. I had mentioned that I perhaps was afraid of tornadoes because of The Wizard of Oz. 708 said that, same with me. Tornadoes have haunted me since that movie. But then they learned, 708 learned that the tornado in the movie was created by a black nylon stocking. I seem to remember seeing footage of that. And I think I would have probably had a heart attack if I went to the Sphere to see The Wizard of Oz, because I have talked to people who have gone and it's like you're really experiencing a tornado. I'm very afraid. 708, we've been without power for almost 4 days now.
Where are they? 708, you say?
Yeah. It's very stressful worrying about battery-backed sump pumps to continue working. But we're listening to WGN Radio. Thanks for being with us, cheering us up. That's what we're here for. That's what live radio is all about. And I have not ever purchased a generator, knock on wood, and haven't used it. Is that now a common thing that most everyone gets a generator?
More and more. There's the availability is increased. So, you know, you do see more and more of those.
Yeah, it was. I was, you know, in the old days before I had a smartphone. God, I loved my Motorola flip phone. I thought I was so cool with that thing. I really did.
I miss my Blackjack.
What is that?
The Blackjack was like kind of like a BlackBerry, but it ended up being I think it was a Samsung device. Anyway,
oh.
I miss the old phones.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I really like being connected at all times. But our brains are shrinking because when something comes up and we want to know the answer, I am so quick to with the Googler to find out what the answer is. Like I should, you know, test myself a little more. Like I have to think about it for 2 minutes before I Google the answer. But it's just so easy to Google whatever you want. And now with ChatGPT, I don't use that very much. I hear John Hansen is a fan, and he has to teach me how to use it because I don't even know what to use it for. Do any of you guys use it for anything?
What did you say?
Chat what?
What?
Sometimes it's like you can, it's kind of amazing, you guys, because I did once, I said, I am sick of coming up with ideas for dinner. So can you give me some ideas for weekday dinners and the recipes? And boom, shakalaka, there it was. So I thought that was pretty cool, but I haven't really used it for anything else. I don't know. I John Hansen has to teach a class on it, I think.
I will be in attendance.
Yeah, I mean, that is a cool way to use it. I know that some people use it to help write emails to people, like if you're applying for a job or something, or just proofread it, though.
I feel like it's I use it more for research. Like if I'm doing a story or whatever, like I'm trying to gather as much research as possible, and it'll basically just funnel all the information into one. So it's easier than going on Google and just clicking a bunch of different links and then putting all the research into one document yourself, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I just don't know. It took me a while to figure out, boy, Shwani, I bet you're even behind me on some of this stuff. Like it took me a while to realize, oh, you could just go to this Google thing and type something in. And then you do know about the Google Doodle, right?
Yes, I know that. And I kind of go along with that. It took me a while to get into the habit of saying, oh, yeah, just go into there and look at this. You know? And now I do it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you can teach an old dog new tricks. I just want to say.
That is true.
Google's changing, though, now, where if you were to Google something, it will now, your main search result will just be the AI.
It'll be the AI response. Where, yeah.
So, like, instead of Googling something, you're not going to get the web page results where you can find an answer yourself. You're going to get the AI summary, like you're talking to a chatbot the entire time, so you're going to have to do a little more work to proofread and fact-check more now.
What's also amazing is that when you get an email, if you have a Gmail account, you'll have an AI summary of the email exchange.
Yeah, like a little...
It's looking at your email.
You're right, because I noticed that it's like a little summary or like a Cliff's Notes version of what
That's
your email
right.
is.
That's right. Cliff's notes. Boy, there's a term that goes back, right?
I know. Eli, do you know even know what Cliff's notes are?
Yeah, I survived high school with a little
bit of Moby Dick. all right, because do they still make those? Those were so helpful. And come on, teachers, you definitely knew we were using them. In fact, in my French class, I was supposed to translate Le Petit Prince, the Little Prince. I couldn't do that, so you just get the English version, and then you figure it out. Yeah, I cheated, okay? Sorry.
I think the statute of limitations is up by now.
I think so, too. I'm sorry, Mademoiselle Ramirez. I am so, so sorry. So anyway, I was talking about the flip phone, and I had a flip phone, and in the old days before you could Google stuff, I would be flip phone in pocket. I would have a flashlight. I would have the radio, and I would just be ready to roll at any moment for the tornado. And please listen, family members, if there's a tornado warning and the siren's going off in your town, I know sometimes you can hear it in the distance, but if you hear it, go in the basement. I mean, what does it hurt? And bring the pets down there too. That's all I want to tell you. And yes, Eli, my French teacher's name was Miss Ramirez.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Wasn't it? I can't remember now. That is good. All right. Still to come on this very show, we're going to talk about houseplants with Tanner the Planter. Tanner Mitchell, I watch his videos all the time. He's written an awesome book about houseplants, how to take care of them. We're also going to talk TV. Do you know there's a new Simpsons coming out? It's streaming only. Marge wants Homer to be a better man. Who doesn't? And we're also going to talk about a cool movie, an independent movie that's really good. And, of course, we have Schwanee's News coming up right now here on 720 WGN. And at 9:33, it's time for Schwanee's Far-Flung Forecast.
Thanks, Wendy. Good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We're heading out east, eastern portion of the country, the mid-Atlantic, to Gloucester City, New Jersey today. Population 11,000 or so, but it goes back to the 1600s, first settled as a fort, Fort Nassau, built by the Dutch in the 17th century in the 1620s. But Gloucester City is also home to a woman named Betsy Ross. You may know that name. Mm-hmm. And this coincides with actually a couple things. We here at WGN Radio celebrating America's 250th birthday, but it was 249 years ago today when the Continental Congress adopted the Stars and Stripes, stating that the flag of the United States be 13 alternate stripes, red and white, and that the Union be 13 stars, white in a blue field, representing a new constellation. Now, Betsy Ross, for years, has been touted as the person who made the first flag. They've never really had a chance to confirm that, but however, she did work with George Washington and others on creating the flag and making flags for some of the regiment in Pennsylvania, some of the soldiers who were fighting the British and the German soldiers known as the Hessians. So Betsy Ross, hometown of Gloucester City, New Jersey, by the way, she was one of 17 children.
What? Catholic?
17 children.
Good golly.
Gloucester City, New Jersey. Boy, they're warm today. 84 right now. Sunny skies. They're going to have a high of 91 today.
Wow.
They're right near Philadelphia, in case you're interested where they are geographically.
I was kind of. So thank you for pointing that out. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking about the song, "You're a grand old flag,
you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave."
All right, well, that was fun. That's the most fun I've ever had on the radio, and Schwanee, you were part of it. All right, we're going to go from the flag to our health. It's Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner. It's coming up next. If you have a question for the good Dr. Wheat, 312-981-7200. It's Sunday morning on 720 WGN. All righty, Wendy Snyder here. It's a Sunday morning, and This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. And joining us once again, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Wheat.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a little gloomy looking out there, but we're supposed to see the sunshine later. Fingers crossed.
Yes. Fingers crossed is right.
We were talking about ChatGPT just a little while ago and how people are using AI. And I was reading an article about AI being used to answer medical questions. What do you know about that, and is it accurate?
You know, the problem with ChatGPT is it has access to a lot of information that's out there, but it's not always accurate information. And so sometimes the ChatGPT hallucinates, and sometimes it has access to outdated information. So it's very possible that you'll find great information that can help you, but I would want to make sure that you are able to verify that with your regular healthcare professional and not assume that it's always correct 100% of the time.
But something, you know, obviously you can't ask artificial intelligence, you know, here are my symptoms, what do I have? But you can say something like, I just was diagnosed with diabetes. What exactly is diabetes? That's where it could be helpful, right?
That absolutely could be helpful. I just think it's really important that if you do that, usually it'll give you a source of where that's coming from. And I would go back and just make sure that that source is actually real. But it can be really helpful to help you understand, especially if you got a diagnosis and it was overwhelming in your doctor's appointment and you need a little bit more information.
Yeah, it's always so helpful to have someone go with you to a doctor, because if they are giving you some kind of information that is not always great news, it's sometimes like your mind is not, you're not listening really. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's sort of like you stop, like you hear the one thing and you don't hear everything that's there. So if you have a family member or a loved one that can go with you and hear some of the other things or even maybe take notes, that can be really helpful.
Have you ever had it where you're delivering news to a patient or whatever and they ask if they can record it? Because I just feel like if you have to go by yourself, it might not be a bad idea, but I don't know if doctors would approve of that.
You know, usually the places that I have worked in have recommended it not being recorded, though we do our best to include the information in the chart so you can go back. But I have often had people with loved ones on the phone with them that are listening on speakerphone so that everybody can hear the same information at once. So they don't have to be in the room, but they can be listening to what it is.
All right. That's absolutely great advice. So one third of adults in the U.S. have used a chatbot to learn about their health. I'm surprised it's not higher, if you want me to be honest here.
Well, not only that, I think that there's some healthcare organizations that are building chat boxes into the ways where you contact them. So you may have used it more than you even think. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with this.
All right. Well, just, you know, for one of my birthdays, my sister and I are both hypochondriacs. And for Christmas one year, she got me a book that she had purchased for herself. It was like the size of two phone books. And it was the like Mayo Clinic Medical Encyclopedia. So before there was Google, there were the Snyder girls, and people would call us and go, okay, here are my symptoms. What do you think I have? So I was pre-Google with that.
There you go. There you go.
All right. And speaking of which, I'm pretty sure I had norovirus, which I honestly doubt. But I don't know what had happened to me, but I like threw up out of the blue. I didn't know. And I thought it was food poisoning. I don't know. But it moved quickly. And I didn't have a fever. But what is norovirus? And with summer travel, I heard it's is it contagious, pretty contagious?
You know, I am happy to hear that whatever you had moved quickly.
Yes.
Norovirus is quite contagious. It is a virus that you often can get from being around somebody that's infected or touching similar food. And it can cause vomiting and diarrhea. It usually takes a little bit to come on, but it doesn't last very long. It usually lasts for a couple of days. But it really is contagious. And so if somebody around you has it, then you do have to be careful, making sure you're washing your hands really well, making sure that anybody that's preparing food is really being mindful about that. And then not norovirus, but the food poisoning. This is that time where we have lots of gatherings. And so we might see more of it, making sure that food is put away, put in the refrigerator, not sitting outside all day without temperatures.
I don't know how we didn't get sick when we were younger. We never refrigerated. Like, my brother would order a pizza and didn't want to share with us, so he'd hide it under his bed and then eat it in the morning. So, I don't know. Like, now I would never do that. It has to go in the refrigerator. And I know you're a doctor, so you don't feel funny saying the word diarrhea, but why is everybody else so ashamed to say that word?
I think that we just don't like talking about our bodily functions.
I guess.
I think I chuckle about the books for the little kids that talk about it to try to normalize it. And I don't know that I had that when I was little. So I do think it's harder sometimes for people to talk about it.
This little girl, I was in a shop and she was with her grandma and she said, "Grandma, I gotta get to a bathroom. I have diarrhea." And it was just so natural. She was probably about 6 or 7 years old. And I like, you know what? I like that. We should all just be honest and open.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's kind of like the whole mental health thing. It's like people never wanted to talk about it. We need to talk about stuff. We really do. Maybe not on the radio. Maybe I should zip it a little bit. But all right. Well, that's why you're here, to help us with all this information. We're going to take a quick break and continue talking with Dr. Santina Wheat. She's the program director at McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. It's 720 WGN. Good morning to you. This Week in Health, we're talking to Dr. Santina Wheat, and she is with Northwestern Hospital, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. She's the program director. Dr. Wheat, I have a friend who has this ear infection, and now she has it in her other ear, and I had never heard about this before. It is a fungal ear infection, and her doctor said that wearing earbuds, or sometimes people wear earplugs at night if they sleep with somebody who snores or something, or they just need quiet, and that contributed to this. Here's another thing I have to be worried about now.
Yeah, so it is quite common for people to use their earbuds all of the time and not really think about cleaning them. You just pop them back in the case and then forget about it. But if you think about that area sort of being a little bit moist, if you get sweaty, especially if you work out with them, then it's an area that fungus can really grow. And so that is why we can see that. So really thinking about making sure you clean them. If you're using earplugs at night while you're sleeping, cleaning those or changing them out. If you have the disposable pipes, because that really fungus can grow anywhere on your body, and this is just contributing to it.
Everybody I see walking around downtown Chicago has earbuds in. I mean, honestly, and here's the thing. She has been taking an antibiotic, and she goes to see the doctor every couple of weeks for the doctor to flush out her ear. But it's taking forever to heal, and he assures her it's on the mend. It's just kind of a long process to get rid of.
It absolutely is, because it's an area that it's just an area where they continue to sit in there, and so it's harder for it to flush out and clean out. So it's just one more thing to be thinking about, making sure that you're staying healthy by cleaning everything around you, and so hopefully that helps prevent it. It's better to not get it in the first place.
Exactly, and the first time she got it, a lot of people don't go to the doctor. Me, if anything's wrong, I go to the doctor because I'm a hypochondriac. I'm sorry, but I'd rather be safe than sorry. My friend did not go right away, and her eardrum was actually perforated from this ear infection.
Oh, wow. Usually we see that from an ear infection that's on the inside. So it's also possible that there was more than one infection going on at the same time. And our ears are so important. They impact our balance, obviously our hearing as well. And so it's something we want to take care of.
And do they still do those eustachian tube surgeries? I know, like, kids who had a lot of ear infections when they were younger, they got that done. Is that still common?
It sure is. It's really important because when kids have the block up in the eustachian tubes, then it really impacts their ability to hear and then talk. My own daughter actually had it when she was little, and it was sort of night and day difference about how many infections she was having. And honestly, how quickly she started picking up words after that was amazing. So it's something that's small and can be really helpful when it's indicated.
All right. Well, good to know about that. I have to ask you about pelvic floor exercises. We're going to get personal for just a second. Having babies, sometimes women have some issues later in life. So their doctors are always like, do your Kegel exercises. I'm doing them right now, by the way. No, I'm not. Anyway, pelvic floor exercises, I thought it was just for women, but now I find out it's not.
It's not. Pelvic floor exercises are helpful for men as well. Sometimes it's for the same things. Sometimes we talk about the Kegel exercises when somebody is having a hard time holding their urine when they're incontinent. So the same can be true for men. There's also some indication that it can help with problems with erectile dysfunction, and so it really can be helpful. And I find that when people try it and they're not noticing a difference, I'll actually send them to a specialist, a pelvic floor physical therapist, to make sure that they're doing them properly and that they're the right exercises for that person. Because it's not just the Kegels. There's a whole bunch of other sets of exercises that people can do for their pelvic floor and have a world of difference, not just for what we mentioned, but also just pelvic pain in general.
You know how many people are going to be searching ChatGPT for pelvic floor exercises today? Because I know I'm going
to. The topic of the day.
Well, you know, you don't think of it. I'll stupidly admit this. I didn't know only men had prostates. I thought we all had them. Mm-hmm. But now, is that something that a pelvic floor exercise could help with, is a man's prostate?
You know, so when the prostate is large, sometimes that's when we see men having problems with urination. And so, yes, it can be helpful sometimes in that case, especially in combination with the other treatments that they might get with, like, medicines or surgeries.
See, there is so much we learn on this program, and it's all from you, Dr. Wheat. We appreciate it. I have one more question for you. It's kind of a weird one, but I came across this. Incense can actually be dangerous for you. What do we need to know about that?
Absolutely. So when you are when you're burning incense, most people are burning it inside, and so that contributes to the pollution inside, and so therefore how well you're breathing. So sometimes the smell makes people sensitive. Maybe they have allergies. But it also can trigger someone's asthma and make it more difficult for them to breathe. They might start wheezing. But the thing about incense is it's releasing particles also, which people can inhale. And so it's kind of similar to like secondhand smoke, where if you're inhaling those things into your lung, it can be damaging over time. So I know that incense is important for many people for their cultural and religious beliefs, which is wonderful. It's just really important to make sure that you have ventilation if you're using it, so that you can still breathe well and not be super close to the particles and breathing them in.
I guess common sense would tell you, you know, if you're burning something, you're inhaling some kind of smoke and particles, but no one thinks about that. So I thought that was interesting. And someone has texted 708, ask about adults getting that eustachian tube surgery. Is that something that an adult should consider if they're having chronic ear infections?
I do actually have a few adults that have had the surgery if they have chronic ear infections. We usually talk about it with children because their ears are smaller and so they're more prone to it. But absolutely, if an adult is having chronic infections on the inside, the inner ear and not on the outside, then they do sometimes still need it. And so I've seen some adults really benefit from it.
Well, excellent. Thank you for all your knowledge. We really appreciate you spending Sunday mornings with us, Dr. Wheat. Always a pleasure.
It is my pleasure. Have a great week.
You as well. Dr. Santina Wheat, she is Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. On this show, coming up after Schwani's 10 o'clock news, we're going to talk about a movie that I saw the trailer on Facebook. I was just kind of tooling around, and I saw the trailer. I watched the trailer, and I said, I have got to see this movie. It's called Bert. It's about an aging street musician, and we are going to talk to the director of the film Bert, which is going to be released, I believe, next weekend or in 2 weeks, but we're going to tell you all about it. That's coming up after the news, which is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. I saw that is from a trailer of the movie Bert. And joining us right now is the director of Bert, Joe Burke. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm great.
I just have so many things to gush about with this movie.
Yeah.
First of all, I just was tooling around on Facebook, and I saw a promo for it, and it's like a trailer for Bert. And it's I'm like, I got to watch this. And I'm telling you, that's a portion of the trailer we just played. It sucked me in immediately. And I knew I wanted to see the movie, and I knew I wanted to have you on the air to talk about it. What a work of art.
Thank you. Wow, that's a great setup there. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're really proud of this movie. It's a personal movie, but yeah, thank you.
Yes, it was sweet. It was touching. It was really funny. And in a nutshell, this is loosely based or inspired by an actual musician named Burton Berger?
It is. So the quick version, Burt Berger, not an actor. He's a singer-songwriter. I met him about 15 years ago at a restaurant. He was playing music on the weekends, his guitar, walking around table to table, big smile, great optimistic personality. And long story short, I got to know him over the years. And I was like, this guy is incredible. I love his music. I love his spirit. You know, he moved to L.A. in 1974 to pursue music, never quite made it, never made an album, just was always playing open mics, playing restaurants. And I was like, the world needs to know this man. And so Bert plays himself in the movie. We shot at his actual house. His roommate, Steve, also plays a part in the movie. They were the real-life odd couple for 12 years.
Wait a minute.
Together.
Yes. Steve's not an actor either? That's his real roommate?
He's not an actor. That's his real roommate.
Oh,
that's
good Lord.
House. I know. And we shot this movie in 7 days for $7,000, three-person crew. I mean, super DIY, micro-budget. It's a love letter to Bert, his music, and then Oliver Cooper, actor Oliver Cooper, who is a professional actor from a bunch of movies and TV shows, he wrote and produced it with me and plays Bert's son in the movie. That's the fictional part.
Okay, he is great. Bert is incredible. He really just captures you. His music, his songs are beautiful. And there's something that Bert has, and it's Parkinson's disease. And how is that connected to you, Joe?
Yeah. So as I got to know Bert over the years, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. Coincidentally, my dad also diagnosed with Parkinson's, and Bert and my dad are the exact same age, and they were diagnosed roughly at the same time. Now, I had already wanted to make a movie with Bert before he got diagnosed. I just love this guy. But then once it came time a few years later to actually do something, he was diagnosed, and we just obviously wanted to just make a movie honoring him and his life. And so it's just a part of the movie. You know, it's not, you know, we're not, you know, leaning into like the disease of the week movie or anything. It's just a man living his life who happens to have Parkinson's, but it's a very personal element in that way. And, you know, the thing about Bert, both in the movie and in real life, he never gave up on being a dreamer. He's like the most optimistic guy, even in the face of having Parkinson's. And he just still says, you know, someday, you know, the world's going to know my music, you know, someday. And coincidentally, the kind of the emotional full circle is now that this movie's coming out this week, the world actually will know Bert and his music. And he just never gave up on that dream. And now here we are with a movie called Bert, honoring him, honoring his music. It's really special.
There is a touching scene in the film where he and his son, Sammy, are sitting around a campfire. And it's like Do you ever have any dreams? And they're talking about their goals and their dreams. And that's where Bert says, everyone is going to know my music. That's my dream. And I want to help in any way, shape, or form because it's great. It's great music. He's a genuine human being. Yes. I'm still blown away that that's his real roommate, Steve, because that guy was a hoot and a half.
Yes. Yes, Steve is a character. I cannot wait for the world to see Steve.
All right, so a portion of this movie will be donated to Parkinson's research, right?
Yes. So what we're doing is we're teaming up with an organization here. It's less research. It's an organization called PCLA, Parkinson's Organization. They're more of a community-based program. So they do a lot of events and for community, people with Parkinson's. They do art fairs and a bunch of classes. It's a cool organization. We've teamed up with them before for a few screenings we've done in Los Angeles. And so we're donating a portion of all proceeds on the first month of the release to them, which is great. And so if you rent or buy the movie, either it comes out Tuesday, so either this week or anytime in the first month, you're really helping us out, raise money for them as well.
And that's what touched me. I mean, every part of this was very touching keeps coming up. I watched the movie myself, and then I have a son who's a musician, and husband, I'm like, you guys have got to watch this movie, Bert. And they're like, oh my God, there's basketball on tonight. And I said, just make time for it, for me. And we all watched it, and we all agreed it was shot beautifully. It's in black and white. And something that I thought of is I'm a huge fan of Kevin Smith, and I love the movie Clerks, and that's one of my top 10, and it's like a coming-of-age movie. This reminded me a little of Clerks, but it's a coming-of-old age, and it really reminded me of it, which is a tribute to you, Joe Burke, because what a great job.
Well, that's a huge, huge compliment, and I appreciate that. And yes, all those guys really were big inspirations for us making this movie. And again, on a shoestring budget, I mean, to make a movie for $7,000, to shoot it in 7 days for $7,000, three-person crew, I mean, it was bare bones in the best way. And also, I live in Chicago, just FYI. I went to Columbia College Film School there, so I learned how to make movies on a low budget, you know, filming in Chicago, running around, and then I moved to L.A., about 20 years ago. But yes, thank you so much for the compliment.
Yeah, and I read that. I was going to bring that up because originally from Toledo, Ohio, and after high school, you came to Chicago where you studied filmmaking and theater at Columbia College. So, you know, you owe Columbia College and Chicago a little love.
Oh, a lot of love. That city really shaped me in so many ways. And to be able to run around with a camera for 4 or 5 years there and just make a bunch of short films with friends, I mean, truly shaped me. And yeah, there's something, you know, I don't know, not to ramble, but there's something about the independent film right now where I think outside of the studio system, you can just make these heartfelt movies. There's something going on in the studio system that I can't even explain Hollywood, but just we were like, we have to make the movie our way. Do it our way, make this special movie, not have anyone tell us how to do it. And it was something with the freedom of that that allowed us to really capture Bert and his roommate Steve in a way that I don't think we could have done it any other way.
Yeah, you really nailed it. And the trailer, I watched it, and then I said to my producer, Eli, check out this trailer. I really want to see this movie. And we both are like, boy, they're giving a lot away in the trailer. But the plot thickens, let's just say. I don't want to...
It does.
Yeah.
It does, yes. There's twists and turns. I promise you can watch the trailer. It's very wholesome, but there's a lot more to it, for sure.
Okay, and now the music in the movie... you know, when Bert's singing, obviously those are his compositions. But what about like the instrumental when there's a lot of driving and you see the car and you hear this? It's just great. Who's responsible for that?
Composer's name, Tim Rutili. Tim is a genius. He also has his own band called Caliphone. You can find them on Spotify. He's been touring with his band for a few decades now. He's great. And, you know, he scores movies, but really, you know, he's more of like, you know, sort of this like indie rock star sort of speak, and he's been playing music forever, but he was introduced through a friend of a friend. Long story short, he saw the movie, loved the movie, and he totally got what we were trying to do. And we knew we wanted to have a really beautiful score. I wanted a lot of trumpet, a lot of live instruments. And so he really just, him and his composers and his team of musicians composed an incredible score that carries you through the entire film, as you know. And I've seen this movie in theaters maybe 100 times now, traveling from around the country, from Alaska to Maine and Phoenix and all these places. And I always watch the movie because A, I like the movie, but B, I love listening to that music in the theater. It sounds so good.
It is really great. And so you can pre-order this on Apple TV, right? And what about in theaters?
Yeah, so our theatrical run did, and we kind of spent like the last 12 to 15 months touring the country ourselves with this movie. That kind of came to an end. So right now, the next phase, on Tuesday, in 2 days, it is releasing officially on digital. So Apple TV, Amazon, all the platforms where you can rent and buy movies. You can go to Apple TV today, right now, and pre-order, which certainly helps us. It helps the algorithm, as they say. But yeah, it comes out Tuesday for a digital release. So you can watch it at home, share with your friends, and enjoy the movie.
And Film Hub has acquired the rights to Bert. That's a pretty big score.
Yeah, we got Film Hub behind it, which is great. And you know what Film Hub does, which is interesting? So it helps independent filmmakers like ourselves actually keep ownership of our work. So we're not like actually like giving it up for like no money to a company that happens right now and then you don't ever see a dollar. Because you're in this movie so low budget, they allow you to kind of keep ownership of your movie, which we do, but they help you get on the platform. So they're like a distributor who's also perfect for independent films like ours, where they're not just trying to take your movie away and you never see it again or you never see a dollar. It allows us to raise money for Parkinson's, allows us to keep ownership of the movie. They're a great partner, and we're very excited to be working with Film Hub. And also, I'm going to say one other thing, because some people spell Bert B-E-R-T, but it's actually B-U-R-T. So I think because of Bert Kreischer, the comedian, all the auto spell correct stuff goes to B-E-R-T. But yeah, B-U-R-T, BertTheMovie.com is the spelling.
Yeah, because it's like Burton Cummings, Three Dog, yes. You know, yes, yes.
Exactly.
So B-U-R-T, Bert Berger.
Yes.
Listen, you don't have to be with your child to be a father. There are some moments in there where Bert is very excited to be a father and wants to take on that role with a lot of excitement and wants to do it right. And there are just so many touching scenes in this film. I just really can't tell you. I know I'm really gushing, but Joe, you've done a great job. This is a masterpiece.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you. And it means a lot. And we just cannot wait. It's been a long time coming. And it's just, I'm so happy that we're at this point now, finally releasing the movie into the world on Tuesday. It's just labor of love, for sure.
It's called Bert. It's a lovely movie. Joe Burke is the director. And what other stuff have you worked on? Because I've seen, I didn't know you until I saw Bert, and now I'm seeing some things that I do know of.
Well, you know, I mostly do independent stuff. My first feature is called Four Dogs, F-O-U-R, which you actually might enjoy as well. It's on Amazon. It's a smaller movie made again with Oliver Cooper and his real-life aunt. What we do is we make these movies where you mix non-actors and professional actors and kind of tap into people's actual lives, shoot at their actual houses. So Bert's our second one of this. Our first one was Four Dogs, a bunch of short films. The first film I actually – so Bert started in a short film we did called Another Cancer Movie, which is a heartfelt dark comedy that Oliver and I act in, playing these bozos trying to make a very serious cancer movie with his aunt Becca, who was actually going through chemo for real. She's doing fine now, thank God. But like,
yes.
So, and that's the first time we casted Bert in anything. So we kind of teeter in this sort of like heartfelt, grounded reality world, comedy drama mix. That's what we love to do. And I've done some stuff as an actor out here, but mainly my focus now is just trying to make really special heartfelt movies.
Well, that's what I love, things that tug at your heartstrings, because you have an emotional connection to the movie then as well. That's perfect.
100%. 100%.
All right, so many people are texting right now, how do I see Bert? How do I see Bert? So give them the information one more time.
Cool. The quick plug, if you want to pre-order it right now, it's Apple TV. Just search Bert, B-U-R-T. You can do it on your phone in 10 seconds. Double-click it. That helps pre-order it. Otherwise, on Tuesday, it will be available on all the platforms where you can buy and rent movies, Amazon, Apple TV, etc., or just go to our website, BURT, BertTheMovie.com. You can find all the information there, and you can watch the trailer there right now.
And the filmmakers will donate a portion of their earnings through the first month of its release to various Parkinson's foundations, including PCLA, which is Parkinson's Community Los Angeles. Film Hub is also going to throw in a portion of its profits to this organization as well. So jump on it, listeners. You will definitely want to see this movie. I don't want to give anything away, but I want to just say kudos to you for getting Brenda Vaccaro to...
Yes, thank you. Oliver's, yeah, thank you. Yeah, she's got a great little cameo, as you know, and she's a friend of Oliver's, and she just really nailed that little part for us big time.
All right, well, I am now president of the Oliver Cooper, Burt Berger, and Joe Burke fan club, so count me in. Great.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody should go see Bird. It really just hits on so many levels. And I have
And it's a great Father's Day gift. That's the last thing I'll say.
It's
for Father's Day coming up next week. If you want something special, an affordable, unique Father's Day gift, get your dad a copy of this movie. Watch it together as a family at home. I promise you, everyone will really, it'll be a special time. I really think so.
And you'll really love Steve. I just got to tell you, the roommate Steve is a wackadoodle. Let's just say.
Oh, my God. Wackadoodle is the perfect word, yes.
All right. And how's your father doing with Parkinson's?
Thank you for asking. It's one day at a time. It's he's an assisted living here in LA. So I was living with him, helping him out when I shot this film a couple of years ago. But it just got to a point where he needed some more professional care, which happens. So he's in assisted living. He's doing okay. It's one day at a time. It's a very tough disease, as we all know. It progresses. Some days you can move around and be okay, and some days you feel so stuck you can't take a step. And I don't know. It's one of those diseases that's really just tough. It's tough, tough, tough. But he's hanging in there, and he's excited about the movie, and he came to a couple of the screenings this year, and
aww,
he's very proud. So, you know, we're doing what we can one day at a time like everyone else.
Yes. And I had a cousin with Parkinson's. I have a friend with it, and my father-in-law has it, and it just seems like it's everywhere nowadays. So you're doing
it. It does. It seems like it's everywhere. I don't know why, or maybe it's just who knows, but everyone can relate to it.
Absolutely. Well, please keep in touch. I'd like to keep in touch with you, and anything moving forward, I'm a big fan. Such a pleasure to talk to you, Joe.
Likewise, I will be in touch, and we'll do a conversation on the next movie for sure.
Absolutely. He's Joe Burke, director of BERT, and you can pre-order it on Apple TV as we speak, and just see it, listeners. It's great. Joe, thank you so much, and continued success. All right. That's all right. He heard me.
Sorry, I was talking to him.
No, that's okay. You enjoyed the movie too, didn't you?
I did. I had a great time with it.
It is a great time. There are some sad moments, funny as hell moments, and it's touching. I keep coming back to that. I really enjoy it.
There's a lot of emotions packed into about 70 minutes, so it's definitely worth your time.
Yeah, that's true. God, okay, so 70 minutes ballpark. 7 days, $7,000 to make the movie. Seven is the magic number. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have Dave Schwann's news coming up. We're going to talk TV. We're going to talk plants. We may talk food. I don't know. We've got everything coming up. It's Sunday morning here on 720 WGN. Wendy Snyder here along with our television man, Alex Zalbin. He is the producer and host of Comic Book Club podcast, the Comic Book Club podcast. How long have you been doing that podcast, Alex?
Oh, my gosh. We've been podcasting since about 2011, but we were doing it as a live show before that. So I believe it's actually going to be our 20th anniversary of doing the show later on this year, which is pretty wild.
Congratulations. Listeners can find that at comicbookclublive.com. And let's start out with, was he the first original superhero in the comics? And I'm talking about Superman.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of debate about that, of course. There were vigilantes beforehand, but Superman, when he was first introduced in, oh gosh, I always get the year wrong, it's either 1938 or 1939, was really the thing that created the whole idea of superheroes, at least the way we know them now and have known them since then. So yeah, I think he's the original superhero, and he does have a great animated show called My Adventures with Superman, which is back for a third season as of today. It has a little bit of a weird broadcasting schedule. You can watch it midnights They say Saturday, it's actually Sunday morning on Adult Swim on Qatar 2 Network. Or more likely, the better way you can watch it is in the morning on HBO Max. First episode is up now. It stars Jack Quaid, you might know as Huey from The Boys, as the voice of Superman, which is pretty wild that he has done one of the darkest takes on superheroes and one of the brightest takes on superheroes at the same time. But he is phenomenal as Superman. It is a anime-inspired remash of the origin of Superman. You got Lois Lane in there. You got Jimmy Olsen, all of the villains. But it's really fun. I watch it with my son, who's about 11 years old, about to be 12, and he loves it. I'm an adult. I love it. It's good for everybody. It's romantic. It's fun. It's funny. It's weird at points. Cannot recommend the show enough. And again, it's My Adventures with Superman. Watch the first two seasons right now on HBO Max, as well as the season three premiere.
Okay, and Jack Quaid, of course, was, we saw him in The Boys, and had he been in stuff before that? Because that obviously has catapulted him to superstardom now, I think.
Yeah, you know, funnily enough, he actually started in The Hunger Games in a super tiny role as one of the bad tributes who was plaguing Jennifer Lawrence's character. So very against how we know him now as this very sweet, earnest, goofy guy. But yes, he did a couple of films, and then The Boys, starting in 2019, was really the thing that rocketed him into superstardom. He did another great animated show called Star Trek Lower Decks, which is very funny on Paramount Plus. Highly recommend checking that out. And then he's done a bunch of movies since, and also he is going to be in the new God of War game they just announced as a gelatinous cube. And if you don't know what that means, just search for Jack Quaid Cube, and you will see pictures of him dressed in a motion capture suit with a cube around him, filming stuff for the game, and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Okay. He is, of course, the son of actor Dennis Quaid and everybody's sweetheart Meg Ryan. And how did The Boys do ratings-wise? Because, as I said, that catapulted Jack Quaid to fame. Were people other than you and me watching that?
It was a huge, enormous hit, even until the last season. You know, we don't have complete viewing data yet, necessarily, but, you know, there were billions of minutes streamed of this, millions of minutes for sure. I think it was debuted as number two on Nielsen's charts for the final season. It was maybe a little bit down for the final season, though we don't have how the finale hit. But, you know, that was a big hit, and it had multiple spinoffs. It's probably going to have more spinoffs to come on Prime Video. Everybody involved in The Boys became a bigger star because of it, but I don't think anybody compares to Jack Quaid, who, just like we're talking about, got rocketed into the stratosphere.
Yeah, totally. And by the way, you were pretty close, pretty close. The Man of Steel officially debuted in Action Comics number 1 on April 18th, 1938. Mm. And Action Comics number 1 is worth probably how much money if you have that?
Oh, gosh. If you have a mint or near mint copy, which is basically like no creases, no folds or anything, I'm going to get the number wrong, but there was recently one of the biggest auctions ever, and I believe it sold for like $20 million or something like that. That said, there was a copy that has the weirdest, wildest history, that it was bought by Nicolas Cage, who is an enormous Superman fan, and then it was stolen from his house and then recovered years later, and then he auctioned it off. So I think that jacked up the price a little bit.
Just yeah.
Crazy story about it, but at the same time, comic book speculation, rare comic books are back. You know, search your attics. Most of them are going to be worth nickels, but every once in a while, there was recently somebody found a trove of just pristine copies of original Batman and Superman comics that
Whoa.
Went for millions of dollars at auction. So you never know.
All right, so Nicolas Cage, I know he was a Superman fan. Is he now legally Nick Cage? Didn't he change his name? What's the difference?
I don't know. I hadn't heard about that, I believe. Oh, yes, actually looking it up now, he did change his name legally last year, but he's still credited as Nicolas Cage on Spider-Noir, the show that he was in that just came out, so He changed it to Nick Cage. That was not his real name. So he's Nicholas Kim Coppola.
Right.
His actual name. He changed it to Nicholas Cage legally. So
okay.
Not Nick.
Okay.
Just Nicholas.
All right. Yes. And, you know, the whole thing is he didn't want people, he wanted to make it on his own merit and not have everyone know he was a Coppola. But everybody pretty much knew he was a Coppola, right?
Yeah. Everybody knew pretty much from the beginning. But now, though, I think he can put the Coppola name behind him. I think he's made his own name for him as an actor. So he's good to go.
All right. I've been dying to know. I love when I break news to my boys about, do you know there's a new Simpsons? And one of my sons is like, I can't find it anywhere. Where is it? And it's like, it's going to be streaming. And Marge wants Homer to be a better man. Oh, Homer. So tell us about the Simpsons Extreme Makeover, the Homer edition.
Yes, this is two episodes. It's a double-sized episode that's premiering June 17th. It's not going to be on Fox. It's going to be on Disney Plus. Disney, of course, owns The Simpsons, among many other things now, since they took over Fox back in, I want to say, 2019, although I've already not been very good with my years already this week. But every once in a while, they put original episodes of The Simpsons directly on Disney Plus, streaming. Leads to a very weird episode count that I won't get into that fans talk about a lot. But we're just looking for two new episodes of The Simpsons. This is going to have Marge going through a bunch of alternate reality scenarios where, like you said, Homer is a better husband for her than he is now. Though I'm going to spoil a little bit and bet that she finds out that the real Homer is the right one for her by the end of the episodes. But instead, you're going to get it seems like a car racer Homer. You're going to get a businessman spy Homer. And also, I don't know how this is better, but they're having a parody of The Joker, the movie with Joaquin Phoenix, where he is the Joker and she's the Harley Quinn who is Joker. So I don't know if that's better, but it's definitely going to be pretty funny.
I love The Simpsons. I always have. I remember when they started out on the old Tracy Ullman show, they would be like little inserts in between sketches, and Homer sounded a lot more like Walter Matthau than he does now. Do you remember any of these? Have you seen? You weren't even probably born.
No. I didn't watch them on the Tracy Ullman show, but I caught up with them later when I was obsessed with the new episodes of The Simpsons on Fox. And yeah, the animation style was entirely different. The humor was very different as well. In fact, I think the thing everybody thinks about is The Simpsons, if you go back and watch those early seasons, some of it is there, but it isn't really until Conan O'Brien takes over as showrunner in, I want to say, season 3, if I remember correctly, where it hits that subversive humor that we really think of as the core of The Simpsons. So it was very different for a while. It was darker. It was more in line with, say, an animated Married with Children than anything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're worth watching for sure. And the other thing that happened with The Simpsons that I think leads up to this is you had those Conan O'Brien years that really cemented what The Simpsons is like. And you had a bunch of years in the middle where people drifted away. They got older. Culture drifted. But now it's really back in a big way. You have the Disney Plus episodes. You also have prepping a second movie that's going to come out at some point. So Simpsons may be hotter than ever.
Yeah, I love The Simpsons. And I absolutely adore Conan O'Brien. And on Max, HBO Max, I don't even know what to call anything anymore. He had Conan O'Brien Must Go, and it was a series where he would go visit his fans around the world, and it's so funny. Is that coming back? Is that still going? I don't know anything about its current status.
Renewed for a third season. The last season came out in 2025, and he has a busy schedule, so I guess they haven't announced, as far as I'm aware, a premiere date for the third one. But, yeah, there should be another bunch of episodes of Conan O'Brien traveling around with his famous friends at some point in the future.
Jordan Schlansky, Taika Waititi is involved. It's just so funny. Conan is so naturally funny. I mean, he really, truly is.
He really is, and in every situation, too. And a lot of that comes from him putting all the embarrassment humor on himself. He's never trying to embarrass anybody else. And I think that's something a lot of people, when they travel abroad, when you watch these shows, it's being a little boorish, a little bit of that boorish American. And he's doing that, but he is making it about him and his lack of knowledge about these places. And that's what allows everybody else to show him along and makes it very funny. It's a delightful, charming show. And yes, you can check that all out on HBO Max right now.
Excellent. All right. We'll take a quick break and then we're back with Alex Zalbin, the host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast, which is going on its 20th year. That's awesome. All right. If you have any TV questions, 312-981-7200. It's 720 WGN. Our little tribute to The Simpsons continues. Every time I see blue skies with the puffy clouds, I always say, oh, it's the opening of The Simpsons. It's Wendy Snyder here. We're talking to Alex Zalbin. And we have a new Simpsons Extreme Makeover Homer Edition. And when did you say that's streaming only? When is that coming up?
June 17th on Disney Plus.
There you go. All right. Never Change. Tell me about this.
Oh, I thought you were telling me to never change.
Don't you go changing.
Yes. This, I'm actually very excited to check this out. I haven't had a chance to see this yet, but this is a new movie that's premiering on Hulu, also on June 17th. This comes from John Reynolds, who people might know as his dumb cop role on Stranger Things, but he is also from the excellent comedy series Search Party, among other things. He wrote this movie, also stars in it, and the concept is insane. It is about the class of 2008 at a high school never got to finish high school because of a tornado destroying the school. And years later, in 2026, they have to come back to high school to finish it off so they can actually graduate in 2 weeks. So it's a little bit like Billy Madison, but high school reunion. It's got John Reynolds in it. Also, Topher Grace is in it. Anna Gasteyer is the principal who suddenly has to deal with all these adults who have to act like they're in high school again. Looks absolutely ridiculous and charming and funny. And I love John Reynolds. I think he is an absolute delight. So if you want to check that out, that's Never Change. And it's premiering on Hulu on June 17th.
Okay, that sounds super good.
Yeah. I'm excited. I watched I've only seen the trailer for it, but it's very goofy, and the whole thing seems to be these people that are stunted in arrested development in their mid-30s, and suddenly as soon as they get back in high school, they're acting exactly the same way they did in high school, and that's just, it's very fun. It's a fun concept.
And John Early is in it. You said Topher Grace, right?
Yes, Topher Grace is in it. Zach Cherry also, who people might know from Severance and other things. And Patty Harrison, who might be one of the funniest people alive. She is on I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. I believe she was on Poker Face, among other things. She was the recurring character, the friend of Natasha Lyonne in the last season of Poker Face. She is so funny. Can't wait to check that out.
And Joe Pera is in it, and I love him so much. He is, his show was so good. I enjoyed it. And
Joe Pera talks with you.
Yes. He has this calming little voice, and Joe Pera talks with you. It was, God, that was on 2018 to 2021. It was so long ago. There were 31 episodes, and he just brings you around his neighborhood to meet people, and he just talks about certain things. It's not unlike the gardening show with Zach Galifianakis. It's just him and people talking. It's so out there, but I enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, this is just a totally stacked cast. It reminds me a little bit of if anybody has seen Wet Hot American Summer, which is also about just adults going back to camp and acting like absolute children. So if you like that, you'll probably like Never Change as well.
And Steve Little, who is the goofiest actor ever, and you might know him, he plays the boyfriend of Wendy McClendon Covey on, what is that show, Alex?
St. Dennis Medical.
Yes. I'm sorry. I am not doing well today in remembering things.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. I love it. All right. Never Change. New movie on Hulu. That sounds amazing. I have to see that. I am Frank Elda. No, I'm not just saying that to you. What's this about?
Yes. This is a really interesting one as well. This is a new stop-motion animated movie, the first one full-length stop-motion animated movie in Mexico's history. Mm. It premiered on Netflix late last week. I think it was on Friday. And it is all about a writer who deals with actual literal and figurative demons. It's for kids. It's for adults. But the thing that's weird about it, it's actually a prequel to a show called Frankelda's Book of Spooks, which premiered on HBO Max back in 2023. So if you like I Am Frankelda, which again, on Netflix right now, some really beautiful animation, Guillermo del Toro helped work on it and nuance the story. He's a big champion of it. And like that movie, you actually have to go over to HBO Max to continue the story, though Frankelda's Book of Spooks is a little more like Tales from the Crypt, but for kids is sort of the pitch there.
Mm.
So both of those things are great, well worth checking out. They're in Spanish language, but beautiful animation on Netflix now and also HBO Max.
And we have about a minute left. Tell us about the listeners, because this seems intriguing.
Yeah, this stars Rebecca Hall, and it premiered back in 2024 across the pond, but it's finally going to be on Starz Video On Demand. It's a four-episode series about people who start hearing a strange tone called the hum, and it does weird things to them. That's basically the whole thing, but it was really well regarded when it premiered in the UK, got great reviews, won awards. So if you want to check that out, that is going to be premiering on Starz on, oh gosh, I should have looked this up, on June, the first episode is already there. Sorry about that. And it's going to be premiering weekly from there. So that's called The Listeners on Starz, and you can watch it and listen to it right now.
What if, like, the whole thing went on and the strange noise they heard, the ringing in their ear, was just they had a bad case of tinnitus? Wouldn't that be a letdown?
Yeah, they should. And at the end of the show, they have a little like boing, a little circle closes it up.
Yeah, that would be great. All right. Well, these are great recommendations, and we have to start posting these. I have to do something because a listener said I have to run into the store. Where can I find these recommendations? So we'll figure out a way how to get them up. Actually, hopefully Eli will figure out a way to get them up. Alex, congrats on 20 years for the Comic Book Club podcast. That's awesome.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I really appreciate it.
And we appreciate you. Thanks for talking to us every week about TV.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully talk to you next week.
All right, cool. And you can go to comicbookclublive.com.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
.com and find Alex's Comic Book Club podcast. All right, news coming your way next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Ah, Chicago. Isn't it beautiful? Lakeshore Drive. Yep. One of the best roads around. It's Wendy Snyder here with you, and I like to call myself the queen of the fest. Of course, that's self-proclaimed. I love a good fest, and Chicago is filled with them, music and otherwise. Today, we have Marcy Huddis on the line with us, the executive director of the Old Town Merchants and Residents Association. And Marcy, let's talk Old Town Art Fair, please.
Yes. Hi there, Wendy. We had an amazing day yesterday at the Wells Street Art Festival. So we're on Wells Street, the commercial corridor. We're between North Avenue and Division. Yesterday was amazing. The weather was warm, summer day. We have 127 artists. Lots of people came out and engaged with the artists. And we're back today. Today starting at 10, so we've already started going until 8 p.m.
I love art fairs. My late friend Tony Fitzpatrick, a Chicago artist who everyone adored. When I worked with him at the Loop radio station, he was a co-host with me, and he would just sit there and draw his little pictures while we were on the air. And art is something, when you look at it, if it strikes some kind of a emotion or reaction, then that's what you're going for. Everybody has a different eye when it comes to art. Is that not true?
I completely agree with you. And to me, it's so important to understand what the artist was thinking, how they created it, their process, and how they engaged with it. So for me personally, it's really different and much more meaningful to be able to talk to the artist and have me tell about the work that I'm interested in. And then all of a sudden, it all has a much deeper meaning. I'm actually wearing, you can't see it because we're on the radio, but I'm wearing a pendant that I bought last year at the festival, which is an 1890 Morgan silver dollar, which is made into a spiral pendant, and I love it. And talking to the artist and hearing their process and then, like, hearing about the actual coin makes it very meaningful for me.
Yeah, that is really cool. You get a little history lesson and you get the artist's version of their artwork. I love that. Mm-hmm. And 127 artists are here. Now, where exactly is the fest located and how? I know you were running an operational yesterday. I'm looking right now over the lakefront and the clouds are breaking. So we're going to have a good sunny afternoon, I'm hoping. So hours and location.
Yeah, so we are from 10 o'clock this morning. We've already started till 8 o'clock. We're in Old Town, so we are the art festival that is on the commercial corridor in Old Town. So we're from North Avenue to Division along Wells Street. And there's going to be a lot happening throughout the day. We have a full schedule of events at wellsstreetartfest.us. There's a schedule there with a listing of all the artists, listing of all the different food options here, the different bands, the different stages. Jesse White Tumblers are going to be here. There's actually going to be juggling lessons. There'll be family art activity area where folks can come make their own art, engage with some artists, and try some things out for themselves.
And there's live music, and you mentioned this pendant you got, so there's jewelry, there is artwork, it's kind of a plethora of things, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things, and we've been having a featured artist each year, and this year our featured artist is Hiroshi Ariyama, who's a Chicago-based artist, and he's featuring his series called Our City, Our Neighborhood. Oh. And this is actually, and it's this super cool series of prints that have a lot of Chicago industrial themes. Some of them are different elf stuff. There's one of the Bean. There's some, you know, looking out from a neighborhood towards the John Hancock building. Very cool.
All right, and it's Wells Street Art Fest.
WellStreetArtFest.us.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So, with two S's. So WellStreetArtFest.us. The festival asks for a $10 donation. That is completely optional. It's really expensive to produce these festivals. We're a nonprofit, and we invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in producing it. So we really appreciate people giving a donation at the gate to help make this possible. I mean, because the bands need to be paid. We have security. It's important to keep the area safe, et cetera. And street festivals are really a quintessential part of a Chicago summer. And it's nonprofits like us who put them on. And we really appreciate people coming, supporting the artists, having fun, and, you know, ideally giving a gate donation.
Yep, a $10 suggested gate donation. If you can afford it, please do, because you'd like to keep this running forever. Because I'm telling you, it's a great afternoon and go until 8 p.m. tonight, and the sky is even bluer since we first started talking. So that's good, Marcy.
Yeah, it sounds like today is going to be much cooler. So it sounds like it's going to be a perfect day, around 70 degrees, great day to stroll the streets, to have a bite to eat and to engage with artists and to buy art for yourself. refer a guest, and I keep intending to buy guests, and I buy more things for myself.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, you buy something for a friend and then buy something for yourself.
That's
a
good,
that's a good way to do it. All right. Well, Marcy Huddis, she is the executive director, Old Town Merchants and Residents Association, and it's the Well Street Art Festival going on now. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Wendy. It's been great talking to you. And come over after you get off. We'd love to see you here.
And I'd love to get a new bracelet. So, yeah. All right. Maybe we'll see you. Thank you so much. Again, if you want some more information, they have the whole schedule on the music, entertainment, food and drink, artists that will be participating. You go to WellsStreetArtFest.us. Quick break, and then we here at WGN Radio are celebrating 250 years of America, and I am focusing on the iconic food brands that have gotten us through some of these 250 years. We'll discuss that next here on 720 WGN. All right. First of all, that's Harold and Kumar. What's the name of the movie?
Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was simple like that. I saw that movie so long ago. They're singing a chick song. I know. It's Wilson Phillips. I love that song. They shouldn't be embarrassed for singing it. And they shouldn't be embarrassed for loving White Castle. Because we here at WGN Radio are celebrating 250 years of America. I like to, on Sundays, focus on some of the iconic food brands that we have enjoyed over the years, and we are talking White Castle. And I was pretty excited to see Charlie Remeliotis in the flesh today. He's in the sports lounge, and I told Dave Schwann this as well, and I said this to Eli. My thought was there. My execution was terrible. I should have left earlier and picked up a Crave case to bring in for everybody today. Because who does not like a White Castle hamburger?
You know, a couple hours ago, you were talking about a sausage sandwich. I was hungry for that. Now I want White Castle.
Does White Castle make Crave cases at 8 in the morning, though, when you come in?
Yeah. They'll make them day and night.
Yeah.
All right. That's news to me. I'm sorry.
Dude.
I thought it was like breakfast time only at that time. Like, where they open up the breakfast menu, and then like at 11 o'clock, it was when the Crave cases get brought
out. No.
I need to do my homework. Later.
Yeah, White Castle's available pretty much 24 hours a day. I will give you a tip. Phone in a Crave case before you go get it, or you'll be waiting in the, what's it called? Oh, I can't remember the Crave line or something. I don't know. All right. Well, here's a little history of White Castle because I learned a bunch of stuff. First of all, there was a guy, J. Walter Anderson. He was born in Kansas in 1880 to Swedish immigrants. And he, for years, he wandered around the Midwest. He had a brief stint in show business. And then he got a job at a Wichita diner. It was there, as the legend goes, that Anderson created his version of the hamburger. There's one story bandied about how he was frying these meatballs, and he got really frustrated and took the spatula and just slammed it down on the meatball, made it into a patty, and people liked it. Now, I want to be clear about something. Anderson did not invent the hamburger. Technically, the combination of hot ground beef between two slices of bread first arrived in the U.S. in the late 1800s. And, oh, what a time that was. He flattened the patty, put it between two halves of a bun, and all of a sudden, it was the beginning of the modern burger. Prior to that, it had pretty much been just a meatball on a slice of bread. He put it between the two halves of a bun, and the food that we're most familiar with came about. If you ate it now, you'd probably call it a slider. His burgers were very popular. In 1916, he went out on his own. He left the diner. He outfitted an old shoe repair stand with three stools and a sign that said hamburgers 5 cents. He encouraged his customers to buy them by the sack, which they did. This is 1916, people. At the time, in Wichita, things were going well. People who were eating hamburgers were basically his clientele. And they wanted something that was quick, savory, hearty, and cheap, and that's exactly what these sliders provided. By 1920, he expanded to 4 stands, and he was being hailed as the king of the hamburger. And historians believe he would have stayed in Wichita, but it was a really weird time. The book by Upton Sinclair, The Jungle, came out. Have you read this, Shwani? It highlighted the brutal treatment of animals.
Animals at the Union Stockyards, yes.
Unsanitary conditions, poor working conditions at meat processing plants. So it took the country by storm. There were no health codes or FDA or anything. So if you were dining out, you were kind of taking a risk. As a result, ground meat especially became seen as a legitimate health risk. So I've lost my place.
You didn't have the refrigeration. You had it,
no.
But not like you have it now.
And so the whole thing is they wanted to say that things were clean. That's what they worried about. And so that's with the white building itself. It's made out of white porcelain steel, shiny, easy to clean. The restaurants had an open concept layout, a grill, a counter, and 5 stools. You could actually watch them make it, which was kind of exciting.
I remember that, yeah.
Beginning in 1954, they started putting 5 holes in each patty to promote faster cooking. The patties are no longer flipped, so they're not grilled per se as much as they're steamed on a bed of onions along with the buns, infusing everything with a very specific oniony flavor. And they became square so every inch of the grill could be utilized. Isn't that genius?
How about that?
Something that set White Castle apart from other burger stands were the high standards they set for their employees. You had to go through a mandatory 2-week unpaid training period, and if you did well, you got a gig.
So you didn't get paid for the training.
Right.
And if you didn't make it, you were still out of a job.
Right. End of 1920s, White Castle was considered trendy. In 1921, I read, or 1929, the first fast food hamburger chain of White Castle came to Chicago. So this spans back forever. And in 1937, White Castle had managed to sell double the hamburgers it did in 1930. And they were declared as American as apple pie and coffee. They became the first hamburger chain to advertise with coupons in the newspaper in 1933. And their slider carrying cartons, the Crave case, were a revolutionary upgrade from the greasy fast food bags used by most chains. So honestly, White Castle started before McDonald's. It's just they didn't have as many stores. And in 2014, Time magazine named the original White Castle slider the most influential burger of all time. In second place was McDonald's, widely considered the most dominant American chain today. And, you know, Ray Kroc took the brand national in 1955, so McDonald's really became a bigger name. But White Castle did it first, and today White Castle has less than 400 restaurants in the country. McDonald's, thanks to its strategy of franchising, has more than 13,000 and another 25,000 outside of the United States. And oddly enough, there hasn't been a White Castle in Wichita where the restaurant chain got its start since 1938.
There was, there still is, in Whiting, just over the state line here, there was a White Castle that had been there for decades and decades on Indianapolis Boulevard. And a few years ago, they ended up, you know, demolishing the original building, I think, and building a new one. But that was kind of a big deal out there. A lot of people had sentimental attachments to that White Castle.
I'm still processing that it cost 5 cents in 1916 or whatever it was when they opened.
A nickel.
That would have been dangerous in my college days if I could get sliders for five cents at White Castle.
They were, I can't remember, I'm kind of a double cheese kind of girl, because I just think the inner bun gets a little mushy, and I think that's just so good with the steamed onions. But I could have sworn they were like, I don't know, 25 cents or something.
25, yeah, right, 25, 50 cents. You could get a half dozen for what?
I know.
350 or so?
Buy them by the sack, Shawnee. Yeah. That's what you got to do. Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to celebrate America's 250th birthday, you can go to WGNradio.com. Spirit of America. All the shows are paying tribute to things that make America wonderful. We have news coming your way next with Dave Schwann. It's 720 WGN.
I feel like I have to talk like this now. It's Wendy Snyder with you on 720 WGN. And joining us right now is Tanner Mitchell. You may know him as Tanner the Planter. And are you listening to this beautiful music, Tanner?
I am. It's wonderful.
Can I tell you a little something? First of all, hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, I'm laughing because I play that music for my plants at home. And it is called Plantasia. 1976, it was released. It's a cult classic electronic album, Mother Earth's Plantasia. It's by a guy, Mort Garson, and it's warm earth music for plants. And it was originally meant to be played to houseplants. Do you play music to your plants?
I do not, but coincidentally, I do have a machine that plays plant music in a different way.
Oh, it takes, I think you were telling me about this before. Doesn't it take when your plant grows or does something and it mimics it? You explain it.
So it's kind of like a lie detector test. You know how they hook it up to you and it measures like your bioreactivity or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It, like, moves the needle. So it's kind of the same way. This guy here in Texas, he made this machine where you hook up these probes to your plant stems, like a leaf or a stem or whatever, and there's electricity conductivity through there because you have, you know, water going through the stems and the leaves. And so as the water is moving between cells, it makes these electrical jumps, and they've assigned those electrical jumps to musical notes. And so your plant plays like its own tune in that way. It's kind of neat.
That's pretty cool. Well, this Plantasia, Mother Earth's Plantasia, was based, it was influenced by this pseudoscientific book, The Secret Life of Plants. It was released in 1973, and it popularized the quirky idea that flora has telepathic emotions and thrives when listening to music. So I am not kidding you. I play Plantasia to my plants, and I've only killed one. So
well, there you go. The proof is in the pudding. Yes, I have read that book, actually.
You know what? That doesn't surprise me. You have your book for the love of houseplants, but I'm telling you, no one can stump you. You know so much about everything plant-related, and I have learned so much from you. What did you take away from that quirky book?
Well, it's kind of, in some ways, it was, I've always had the idea. I can tell you this is so honest from me. Ever since I was like a toddler, 5, 6, 7 years old, I've always had this weird sort of inkling that everything around me was alive or was some way, you know how like in Toy Story, like the toys come alive at you know, when the kid's not around, something like that.
Yeah.
I've always felt that way just about the plants and the environment. Like when I'm out in nature, I spent a ton of time outdoors when I was a kid, and I've always had that sort of idea. And so the book sort of just reaffirmed that. A lot of books have sort of reaffirmed that to me in some degree. Of course, not literally, but in some degree, yeah.
That's fascinating. All right. Well, your book is so good, For the Love of Houseplants. It is sitting on my coffee table, which is technically a leather ottoman, but it's in my front room, and I refer to it a lot. It is really my plant Bible. So thank you for writing For the Love of Houseplants.
first of all.
That's exactly what we wanted to use it for. So that brings me a lot of joy to hear that.
Oh, I love it. And I've been watching your videos, and it's so funny. I work at a plant shop now. It's called Vagabond Botanical in LaGrange, Illinois. And my coworker and I were talking about you yesterday, and we both brought up the video where if you buy plants at big box stores, and this is no slam. Sometimes you're at a big box store and you see one and you love it and you have to have it. But they're made to look beautiful for you to purchase them, but then underneath is not always a beautiful thing, and the roots are more important. And I learned that from you. Why don't you explain that to the listeners?
Yeah, so the roots are the performance of your plant. It drives the performance of your plant. They're like the engine of your plant, if you will. And different growers, they grow for different parts of the industry. So you have like the big box part of the industry. You have the interior scaping part of the industry, you know, the plants that are put into like airports and office buildings, things like that. And different growers grow for different parts of it. So the same grower that's growing for, you know, to put their installs into airports is not the same grower generally that's putting their plants into big box stores like Lowe's and Home Depot. And their cost is going to be wildly different. Now, that's going to be based on the time it takes to grow out the plant. And so although it's not like big box plant, you know, are always going to be inferior, but generally speaking, when you buy from a different part of the industry, something that has taken the time to build out a really solid root system, your roots to leaf ratio is going to be much better, and your plant is going to acclimate much better inside your home. When you get a plant from a big box store, they are mostly doing what's called fertigating, which is where they fertilize with a foliar spray. They're fertilizing from the top. And this grows the leaves very quickly, but the roots don't grow quite as quickly. So then you have an imbalance of leaf to root ratio. This is not exactly how it works, but just pretend that you needed 5 roots for 5 leaves to stay healthy. Well, when you fertigate, when you're fertilizing from the top, you're going to grow out those leaves very quickly. Let's say you have those 5 leaves, but you only have, let's say, 2 roots. And so then when you take that plant out of an ideal environment from a greenhouse and into your house, then it's going to take a long time to acclimate because it needs to try and build out those roots to keep the above leaves happy and healthy now that they're not being fertigated from the top and not in a greenhouse environment.
And the soil is not always up to par when you get it from a big box store.
Not always. You have to remember that these greenhouses are just a wildly different environment than your home. So greenhouses, you know, they have a ton of light. They have a ton of airflow. And to combat the plants drying out really quickly and, you know, having to water them every day, greenhouses will generally plant in a very moisture retentive soil. Otherwise, they have to, you know, water all the time. And every time they water, that's money down the drain for them. That's less profit for them. And so they plant in this really moisture retentive soil. But then you bring it into your, you know, comparatively darker and lower airflow house, and your soil doesn't dry out in time because it's a super moisture retentive. So oftentimes it's advantageous to plant your houseplant, once you get it inside your home, into a soil that's more appropriate for the house, which is generally faster draining.
Yeah, I'm the only plant I killed was a ZZ plant, and I'll be honest with you, they're supposed to be hard to kill. I got it from somewhere that wasn't a plant shop, and you're not supposed to water them very often, and I didn't. And my chopstick was telling me it wasn't really, it was pretty dry. But in the very center where those little potatoes were, it was soaking wet, and that's why it died. So, yeah, the roots are the most important. I learned so much from you. And if you get the Tanner the Planter app, live sales twice a week. Is it Tuesdays and Saturdays at 6:30 Central Time?
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right.
And you take care of your plants, you pack them well, you ship them, and you do a beautiful job. And we're going to take a quick break. And can you answer questions from the listeners?
Oh, we'd love to.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of it. You know everything. And if they stump you, I'll give you a dollar. All right, 312-981-7200. Indoor plant questions. Do you have any? We're here for you today with Tanner the Planter on 720 WGN. Here's more Plantasia for you. This is killing me. Mort Garson is the guy who put together this. It's basically just electronic music with a Moog synthesizer. And you're supposed to play it for your plants and they will grow well. But I just read Tanner Mitchell's book, Tanner the Planter's book, For the Love of Houseplants. And now I know how to work with my plants. It's very soothing. Look into that Plantasia, will you, Tanner? Promise me?
I'll promise. That guy sounds like he was on psychedelics or something, though. That's crazy music.
I know. Okay. I received a plant from a friend of mine. She didn't want it any longer. It's a devil's backbone. I got it home and put it in better soil. It's called the devil's backbone, I would imagine, because the stems are kind of rickety, like a crooked backbone. It's a variegated one. What do I need to do to help this thing plump up? It's kind of wilty.
Well, plants are going to wilt from dehydration. So this can either be from overwatering, which is where you've watered the plant too frequently and the roots have died off. And kind of like what we were talking about in the last segment, the roots, there's not enough roots to sustain or keep the foliage above it nice and plump. So either that has happened or you're just underwatering it. For the devil's backbone, I recommend bright light, which is 1,000 foot candles of light, and then watering only when all of the soil in the pot has dried out. Hmm. Make sure that the pot isn't too large, and it should be in a really fast-draining material like a cactus soil.
Okay. Good advice. I just brought it home yesterday, so I will listen to all your advice. Wally is on the line, and Wally has a question for Tanner the Planter. What's going on, Wally?
I've got a philodendron that was given to me off a cutting off of a main plant, and it was growing great and in my condo and was all the way up to the ceiling. The person who gave it to me, I asked him if he could cut it down. He cut it down, replanted it, and now it's dying. I mean, I literally only have two leaves on it, and it doesn't seem to be growing at all.
Tanner, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. So sometimes plants will go through a period of shock after you prune them or, you know, when you transplant them or transport them. I'm curious if it could have been a coincidence and maybe it had some sort of a pest issue. They're also, that's a tricky one without seeing more of it and kind of what's going on with it. But really, if you're not, recovering the plant in a bright light situation, that would be another thing to kind of consider. I'm wondering, too, if with its height that it started out with, maybe it was close enough to the light source, you know, with that extra height that it had, cutting it back, it reduced the light like too much to really be able to dry out quite as quickly as it once was. Those are the questions that I would ask. But without seeing it specifically, I wouldn't know for 100% sure.
So maybe you could put it on a table or something and get it closer to the sun.
It started off, it was maybe 2 feet high. It grew all the way up to my ceiling, which is about at least 8 or 9 feet up in the air. And then we cut it back to where its original height, and it is just not doing anything.
Well, so here's a good rule of thumb. Whenever you're pruning your plants back, you never want to cut back more than about 33% at a time. Reducing it that drastically, that sounds about 6 feet, maybe about 75% of the entire plant was cut back all at once. That can be seriously shocking to a plant to lose all of that energy source just like that at the snap of a finger. So I would expect there to be quite a bit of shock while it kind of recovers from all of that energy loss.
Could it recover, do you think? Should Wally keep taking care of it and hoping for the best?
I think so, for sure. Just it might take a while. I've done this with Monstera before, which aren't philodendron, but you pretty much care for them the same way, and they have a lot of the same characteristics. And I've had them, even with clients, sometimes take even 8 months to a year to fully recover from such a drastic transplant or drastic prune back.
Well, Wally, good luck. Don't give up on it and give it some sunlight.
Okay, thanks much.
All right. That's a lot of people give transplanted plants to friends or cuttings. I gave my mother-in-law, Annette, a polka dot begonia, and she loves it. And they're very easy to propagate. So it's fun to pass things along to other people. It's like a part of your plant keeps going.
Yeah, and you can get people into plants and have them just be as crazy as you are. So, you know, there's some company in the hobby, you know.
Yes, and you made me that way. Honestly, you did. I had one plant before I started watching your videos, and now I have, like, I think 45. So,
well, you're welcome.
Pam has a question for you. I think we have time for one more. Pam, this is Tanner.
Hi. I have a bromeliad plant. It's small. It has one dead flower on it, and I can't tell if it's going to live or going to die because it's got, like, yellowy leaves, a little bit of brown on one or two of them, some green leaves, and some new leaves. I don't know what's going on with this.
Yeah, that can be a little bit confusing. So bromeliads, they all have the same life pattern. So here's what happens. You buy them at the store, and they're generally going to be flowering when you buy them. The thing about bromeliads is they only flower once in their lifetime. So when their flower dies back, the entire plant is going to die back. But here's the kicker, and here's why I want you to hold on to it. Because as the mother plant dies back, it's going to be growing babies from the base of the soil. You might start seeing them any day now. So as the mother plant dies back, it's going to start growing, like, usually 1 to 3, sometimes up to even like 5 babies out of the soil. So as it sort of shrinks, those are going to be growing. And so once they grow up to be about half or even just as big as the mother plant, you can separate them from the mother plant and the same life cycle continues. But I want you to give it bright light. You need to give it bright light during this time so that those babies have the chance to grow.
Okay. And I thought I read somewhere about the dead flower that's on it. Do I cut that off or do I leave it on until something else happens?
It doesn't really matter. If it's completely died back, you can cut it off so that the plant is a little more sightly. But if you want to keep it on and it doesn't bother you, that's fine as well. But if it's dead, it's dead. There's nothing else to, there's no energy to give back to the plant from it. There's no purpose of it, really.
Good luck to you, okay. Pam.
Thanks.
All right. And we have like a minute left, Tanner. It might not be fair to do this to you. But Nancy, you have a question for Tanner, the planter?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. I have a jade plant that I've had for 5 years, and it's cutting from a 60-year-old jade, but it got too much water, and I need to know how to dry it out.
That's a great question. Tanner?
Well, if the weather's good enough out there, I would put it outside in full shade and let the soil dry out very quickly that way. You can also use a hair dryer on the cool setting. That can help, wick out some of the moisture as well. But really being outside, protect it from the rain, of course. You don't want it to get more wet. And, of course, make sure it's getting that nice bright light. But avoid direct afternoon sun. Just keep it in full shade.
What about repotting it?
Okay.
Yeah, you could repot it as well. That's if you wanted to do that, you could absolutely do it.
Is it small enough to repot?
Yes, it's only about a foot high. There's several branches. Do they like to be pot bound?
They don't mind. They're succulents, so it's not that they like it or dislike it, but they like their roots to dry out very quickly, their soil to dry out very quickly, and so a smaller pot really accommodates for that. So I always err on the side of a smaller pot when I have succulents like that.
Thank you, Nancy. Good luck to you. We appreciate it. And so now you have TannerThePlanter.com. Everything's there. You can shop the plants. You have to download the app to do that. You can find out information on the book For the Love of Houseplants. And you can go meet Tanner the Planter and his lovely wife, Erica, because you guys are doing book signings all over, huh?
That's right. We have a big big leg of the tour coming up. We're doing a lot of the Southeast this second half of June, so we're excited about that.
All right. Well, listen, I love talking to you, and thank you for joining us on such a regular basis. It makes my day, Tanner.
Anytime, Wendy. It's a wonderful pleasure, and I think I'm about to go listen to some Plantasia.
Good for you. All right. Thank you so much. He's Tanner Mitchell. You can find all his info at TannerThePlanter.com. News coming your way at noon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And Sunday morning has turned into Sunday afternoon. It's Wendy Snyder with you. And let's go live. Well, we're not going live to the Shedd Aquarium, but we are going live to talk to the Conservation Action Coordinator, Evelyn Alvarez. Hi, Evelyn. How are you?
Hi, Wendy. I'm doing really good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Again, I see these wonderful ads popping up on my Facebook page, and it's like, do an action day with the Shedd Aquarium. And I said, what is an action day? Because I looked, and there's a location not very far from my house. So first of all, tell us about the Shedd Aquarium action days and how we can participate.
Yeah, so action days allow people to, to take direct action for both people and wildlife right in their backyards. Like you mentioned, our conservation action team at Shedd works across many different sites throughout the Chicagoland area, and we encourage volunteers to sign up and participate through those different activities. So it could be really depending on their interests. The main ways that we take action in our environment is mostly through like community cleanups. We do a lot of litter cleanups at different beaches and parks. And then we also take action through woodland habitat restoration, and that takes place in our local forest preserves. So we have many different sites. Do you want me to name all of our sites?
Yeah, well, let's start. The first one I came across was the woodland habitat restoration, and that takes place at the Skokie Lagoons, right?
Yes, correct.
Obviously in Skokie. That would be my guess.
Yes.
And so what do you do there with the woodland habitat restoration?
Yeah, so up at Skokie, and then we have another site where we do woodland habitat restoration at Bob Mann Woods. So at those two locations, we prevent invasive species from basically taking over our local forest preserves. And
I was just going to say the Bob Mann Woods is located in LaGrange Park and near the Salt Creek Woods Nature Preserve. And
yes.
Invasives, that's the one near my house, so I may participate in this, and it lists the dates and everything. But you mentioned invasive species. Can you tell us about buckthorn and how to get rid of it? Because it's taking over the world.
Yes. Buckthorn has become a really, really aggressive invasive species in our local forest preserves. And so, yeah, what buckthorn basically is, it's a plant that was not native to our region here. And so it was brought from Europe. It's called European buckthorn. And so now it's come here to North America, and it's kind of taking over in different places. And so these are two locations where we're directly taking action to make sure that buckthorn doesn't continue to spread. And what we're doing is we're basically like bringing up volunteers, we're teaching them how to cut and saw down these buckthorn trees and resprouts, and they're helping us basically take them down, make them into piles, and then throw them on like a big bonfire and make sure that they don't come back.
Yeah, because they're like the hardest thing to get rid of, and once you cut them down, I just know because they're in my yard, it comes back bigger and stronger.
Yes. So we take a lot of measures as well as staff on the Conservation Action Team to help make sure that what the volunteers are cutting and removing doesn't come back. And so there's a lot of different ways to basically treat that buckthorn once it's cut and make sure that, it kind of like stays dead and doesn't come back.
Well, I need to participate just to learn how to get rid of buckthorn. there's also a litter cleanup and coastal habitat restoration, and that takes place, again, the listings, the dates, and the locations, Ping Tom Memorial Park. I don't know where that is.
Yeah, Ping Tom Park is in Chinatown, so that one's really central to Chicago.
Yes, and I actually know from the picture seeing it, and 63rd Street Beach, Calumet Park Beach, and 12th Street Beach, and this is just cleaning up the coastlines, correct? Is that what it's called, the coastline?
Yes, yes, that is correct. We do our litter cleanups up at all those locations that you mentioned, yes.
And, is this how long does this last? Like, a couple of hours you get out there and work with the volunteers to do this cleanup?
Yeah, so we bring out volunteers once a month at each of these sites, and the cleanups last from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then I think the only one that's different is 12th Street Beach is from 10 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. That beach is a little smaller.
And shedaquarium.org, we need to take care of our waterways, our woodland areas, because a lot of little critters are living in those areas, right?
Correct, yes.
All right. Well, I never knew anything about these community action days, and I think every day should be Earth Day because we need to take care of our planet. So I really appreciate you joining us. And listeners, if you'd like to participate, do you have to pre-register for these at all, Evelyn?
Yes. Yes, you do. On our website, like you mentioned, Shed Aquarium Action Days is all people need to look up.
Okay, and it's shedaquarium.org, and Evelyn Alvarez, Conservation Action Coordinator at the Shed Aquarium. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'd like to talk some sports with Charlie Romeliotis, because I guess some big things happened that some I'm aware of and some I'm not. So that's coming up next here on 720 WGN. Yeah, we're rocking the Skinner this morning. Well, it's afternoon, sorry. It's Wendy Snyder here, and Dave Schwann's in the newsroom. We have Charlie Romeliotis in the sports lounge today, Eli Burke behind the glass producing the show, and pretty exciting basketball action last night, Charlie.
It was. I honestly, admittedly, have not watched much NBA over the last couple of years, but I've been pretty riveted. Yeah, I've been pretty riveted at this NBA Finals, and for the New York Knicks, all four of the games they've overcome a double-digit deficit in all four of the wins. I think even all five of the games, but they didn't win that other one. So it's been a crazy run for the Knicks.
Okay, so they haven't won in 53 years.
Yeah, it's a long time. The Hawks went 49 years without a Stanley Cup from 1961 to 2010. So that's, yeah, they were in, that was a long drought.
I have two boys, 27, 23. They aren't really ever watching basketball. Our house had basketball on like the last week. It's just been crazy town. And I don't know why, just... I love the Bulls. I love Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And when Michael stopped playing, I kind of stopped paying attention to NBA. But the New York Knicks, such a big name, a recognized name, I am really shocked that they haven't won in 53 years. That's blowing my mind.
Yeah, and also it felt like it was the Oscars at all the Madison Square Garden games because there were so many celebrities that were sitting front row.
Why is Chalamet everywhere?
He is. He's all over the place. Taylor Swift was there front row. I didn't know she was a Knicks fan.
Did you see
Ride or Die?
What did her shirt?
It was like her and a couple friends that were all wearing like these homemade like T-shirts in Knicks blue and orange. The one that Taylor Swift said Stevie Nicks, but spelled like K-N-I-C-K-S.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
And there were
actually
a bunch of like Knicks puns just on their shirt. It looked very fun. And I wonder who put those together for them.
I saw some people that were speculating / half joking that was her bachelorette party.
Oh,
they said like the wedding's gonna be in New York, right?
Yeah, I think at MSG.
Oh,
right at Madison Square Garden.
Look at you boys
look at
gossiping about Tay Tay.
We thought this was gonna be a sports segment.
Pop culture, baby.
I know, totally. All right, so the New York Knicks won their first NBA championship. How often have the San Antonio Spurs won? They've been doing well for years or no?
Yeah, they've won quite a bit, especially in the Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan era. So they've been there a few times, but not in this new era with this. They call him the alien, Victor Wembanyama, the 6 foot. Was he 6 foot seven?
Seven six foot, foot five. 7.
Oh, yeah, that's
don't,
right.
Don't cut them short.
I got the 6 and the 7 mixed up. I thought it was, 7'6".
That was last week.
Last week, correct.
Wait, so which is he, 7'6"?
He's listed as like 7'4", 7'5" online, but no one believes he's that short. They think he's at least like 7'6".
Yeah.
7'6".
Yeah, he's...
Not 6'6".
Yeah, I know, they're...
Correct, 7.
This is blowing my mind.
I don't think anybody's ever seen this guy's head.
How tall was Artis Gilmore? I'm sorry, I had to look that up because I'm curious. 7'2". Because I got to meet him a long time ago, and his thigh was like my waist. He's a big guy. Yeah, Artis Gilmore. I did love the Bulls. I played high school basketball, but for some reason I like playing more than watching. But all right, so that's the basketball sporting end of things. What else? Stanley Cup, do we need to know about?
Yeah, so that game 6 is tonight. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if we have back-to-back days of the NBA championship and Stanley Cup being awarded. But Carolina has made a... They had an unbelievable postseason, and so now they're going to try to win their second Stanley Cup in franchise history. And the cool storyline in that one, well, two of them, one, their head coach, Rod Brendamore, was the captain of the Carolina Hurricanes on their first Stanley Cup. He's currently their head coach, so he has an opportunity to win one as a player, as their captain, and now as a head coach. But then also, Carolina's current captain, Jordan Staal, won a Stanley Cup with the Penguins in 2009, and he hasn't won one since. So if he wins the Stanley Cup tonight, it would be the longest time span of a player winning their first cup and then their second cup, which is 17 years. So I think Chris Chelios is actually the current record holder.
Really?
So, yeah.
You sports guys and your stats, I don't know how you keep things straight sometimes. I really don't. I know you look it up. It's not all at the top of your head, but you guys do know a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know a lot about everything. I know a lot about one thing. It's just sports. So.
Yeah, well, that is very impressive. We all have our specialties.
We also have a ton of help from our listeners. We just got more calls in making sure that we gave our proper flowers to the Chicago Wolves, who are in the Calder Cup Finals themselves in the AHL, a step below in the NHL. And aren't they the feeder team to Carolina, Charlie?
Correct. And their head coach is of Greek descent. He's I actually think he's 100% Greek, so representing our Greek culture well, too.
I made the best Greek lemon chicken and potatoes the other night.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And homemade tzatziki, and I'm pretty proud of myself because I am not Greek in any way, but I like the food.
We've had a lot of food talk on this
that's a 12 o'clock hour.
Getting really hungry now.
I know.
You never did tell me what kind of tomatoes you're growing.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I have one that is named Julia Child. I got it from the Chicago Tomato Man, and she liked a good like beefsteak tomato.
Beefsteak tomato, sure.
And then I have what is it called? It's like a not a marionette. It's a tomatoette. It's a mid-range size, in between a cherry tomato and a. I can't remember. I have to go to ChicagoTomatoMan.com. But it's so a cherry tomato meets a big tomato. It's what's in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
I have an idea what you're talking
about.
Okay,
and then I have cherry tomatoes as well. So three different ones.
I love cherry tomatoes. Put those in a salad. Oh,
there is nothing like a homegrown tomato. I'm telling you that right now. And you need fresh tomatoes on a gyros because now all I can think about is more Greek food. And then FIFA. Can we talk FIFA? I just like saying FIFA. I don't know anything about what's going on, but it's the FIFA World Cup. What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, I watched Friday night's game against Paraguay, and USA rolled past them. And I don't think USA was one of the favorites coming into this tournament. I think they had like the 10th or 11th best odds, somewhere in that range. So they're not really necessarily powerhouse. So I don't know if USA just took advantage of a tough outing by Paraguay or if they could be better than we think. So I need to see another game. I think they got Australia on Friday. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we're in the group play right now, which is going to last for a few weeks.
How come we're not that into soccer these days? I mean, I guess younger people are more into it, like Gen
I don't even know.
I don't know where we are. Is Gen Z now?
Or what's Gen the... Alpha.
Gen Alpha.
Yeah. We here in Chicago never really paid that much attention to soccer, did we?
Not really. I feel like ever since the NFL has boomed, mm-hmm. it's hard to watch an NFL game and then go to soccer, where there's admittedly a lot of flopping around in soccer.
Yeah.
And this is someone that grew up playing soccer, so I feel like I could say this because I spent a lot of summers in Greece, and that was all we played was soccer. So I have the privilege of seeing both sides.
Yeah.
I like playing, and I loved watching it as a kid. I don't know. There's something with the countries that get me motivated to watching, but I'm not like a MLS or Premier League fan. Like I don't watch that.
I'm just surprised it's not more popular here, because when I think back, my kids did the AYSO volunteer soccer playing as well. And it seems like a lot of kids play soccer here, yet it's not as important to us here in America, I guess.
Yeah, and you would think we would have a lot of homegrown there's from everywhere. I think in Europe, because it's just like easier to play there, like all you need is a ball, whereas in the States, you know, like baseball and basketball and whatever, hockey, football, yeah. they all... They're popular sports, but back in Europe and overseas, they like all you need is a ball, you know, in the streets, which is fun.
Oh, now people want the recipe for my Greek chicken and potatoes. I will try and get it together. I follow this girl, Foods by Maria, and she's on TikTok, and she's Greek, and she really has some great stuff, but I'll try and get it for next week. And then somebody wants to know if I watch the WNBA. No, I should, because 847 says it's just so much better than the men's, just asking. I'm pretty impressed with how good they are, but yeah, I don't watch basketball, and I should. I'm Gen X, and they've been trying to convince us soccer is going to be big in the U.S. Had to play it in phys ed and in elementary school like 1977. We all hated it. Yeah, I liked kickball better. That was more fun.
We had a person who was a number of years older in my neighborhood that he would come home from college, and we were, you know, still 12 years old. He was, you know, the big brother to everybody, the hero. In the neighborhood, he taught us how to play soccer. We were all out playing football or baseball. He said, "You guys know anything about this? Let me show you." And we ended up having a blast out there playing soccer.
Could you, like, you know, kick the ball on your foot and ankle and then keep it
back
going?
Back then I could. Now
really?
I can't do it to save my life.
Wow. And remember Pele? He was really popular for
a
while.
Yeah.
But then it's like, I don't know, it just didn't take off in America like it did in all the other countries.
It may have a real surge of popularity now that they're building a new stadium for soccer here.
There's the stadium and performances like you saw last Friday from the national team. A lot of people are going to be getting into a sport that may not have thought about it before.
That's right.
That's true. FIFA. I just like saying FIFA. It's so much fun to say. all right. Well, thank you for all the sports updates. Charlie Remiliotis, it's nice to see you in person.
No problem. And I'll be back next Sunday, too.
He said he'll be back next week.
Yeah. Oh.
You get 2 weeks of me.
Excellent. All right.
Two straight weeks.
Excellent. All right.
Let's talk Greek food again next week.
Yeah, I'll bring my recipe. And then you can critique it, because I'm not Greek. So we'll do that next week.
Let's do a taste test, too.
I see you guys... I know I'm a girl. Sometimes you guys forget it, but I am a girl. I don't want to cook for everybody. all right. Well, we'll figure it all out. Shawnee's got your news coming up next here on 720 WGN. Hi, I'm Wendy Snyder, and I'm a girl. 218 has texted in, thank you, Wendy, that I'm a girl and I don't want to cook for everyone. Made my day. I'm a retired chef. I do like to cook. I like to cook Sunday meals, but believe it or not, I am going to see a movie at a theater tonight, Ron Brown.
What? What movie have you chosen? to grace with your presence?
Well, I had a few margaritas last night, and Jimmy Mack said, oh, I want to go see the new Spielberg movie. And I said, all right, what's it called? No, I'm kidding. Disclosure Day. I just love Aliens. I love Spielberg, and I guess agreed to go to a movie, so I will be sitting at a theater later on this afternoon.
I hope you enjoy it more than I did.
Oh, no.
Well, there's a lot of good things. I mean, it is a Spielberg movie. It's not typical. There's more chases than I expected, right away. And it's the first hour and 45 minutes is like, you know, mystery and what are they talking about and why is this happening? And then, you know, then it gets interesting. And but it always looks good. The acting is very good. So it's going to hit different people different ways.
Yeah.
So, there were people that didn't like E.T. So.
Oh, give me their names.
but it should be seen because it's a cultural event when Spielberg releases an Alien movie. It really is, and he's put a lot of time and a lot of care into it and a lot of thought. So I do hope you enjoy it, and I would love to hear what you think about it.
Hmm. All right, yes.
It's doing very well at the box office right now. It opened at number one, and $44 million, and that's above the estimates of $35 million. So it's not the big summer blockbuster as of yet, I think it cost, they said, $115 million to produce, $80 million to market, so it's got a long way to go before it turns profitable. But it's a lot of people are going to see it. Thursday night I was there.
Well, I can't believe I'm going to see a movie. When did it open?
Friday wide release, but
oh,
I was there Thursday.
Look at me. 2 days after release. That never happens.
Well, that tells you that it's a cultural event, you know.
Yeah.
So it's going to get people in the theaters who don't usually go to theaters. And are you going to see it in IMAX or?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah, I didn't see it IMAX either, and I don't know that it's necessary. It's just, you know.
I have a question for you. Uh-huh. You know, when you've watched movies, you've liked them since you were young.
Right.
Siskel and Ebert, I liked them both very much, and yet I didn't really care what they said about a movie because I was going to, you know, I want to see what I want to see, end of story. Are you kind of like that, too?
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. I enjoy listening to people talk about movies.
Yeah.
I was like Siskel and Ebert. I would read their reviews in the newspaper, you know, the Sun-Times and the Tribune. I would read both of them. I would buy Ebert's reviews, you know, in book form that he would put out at the end of every year because I was going to video stores. So, like, I'm looking for, you know, some good recommendations. But, you know, it's an opinion. What's valuable, I think, when a critic talks about a movie, it can maybe give you some insight that you hadn't considered before. But it's not going to, if you're a Sylvester Stallone fan, you're going to go see a Sylvester Stallone movie, no matter what the critic says. If the critic says it's not any good. And critically, he may be right, but if you're just a fan, you like what you like.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to apologize for with that. Go see what you like.
Yeah. Well, other things going on. Project Hail Mary. Which movie is that again?
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's that Ryan Gosling movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's another
I want to see that too.
Space alien movie. And now's your chance. It has been at the theaters for 3 months now, which is a extremely long run for a movie to be playing in the theaters these days. But it was making a lot of money. So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out maybe we should keep it in the theaters and make more money. And everybody around the table looked at each other and said, yeah, let's do that. So it made more money, but it's now officially going to go to streaming. So you're going to be able to see it without paying $25 in the popcorn and everything. But that'll be on MGM Plus on June 18th.
I don't know what I have and what I don't have anymore.
You can still buy it or rent it across all the regular platforms, but it will be free if you have an MGM Plus subscription. That's June 18th, which is this week. So, and that's finally, you know, it was released in the theaters March 20th. So that's a long time. And I saw it like opening weekend. So I liked it. I didn't love it. A lot of people just absolutely loved it. Like the favorite movie I've heard.
Really?
And it's good. I thought it was too long. I was kind of surprised by the humor, I didn't know it was a, you know, it's quasi-comedy. I mean, there's a lot of funny. So that's why it's a crowd-pleasing movie, and I think you would like Project Hail Mary. You might like Project Hail Mary more than Disclosure Day if I were going to bet on it.
All right, well, I will let you know. And speaking of movie critics, some sad news today.
Yeah, it's actually, it was a couple of days ago. Gene Shalit, everybody remembers Gene Shalit more for his delivery and his appearance. He had the big, bushy mustache and the eyebrows, and he was always like talking in puns, and he was always being clever, but he was entertaining.
And he was a lot.
He was. He was the Today Show movie critic.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I, you know, he was still around, you know, when Siskel and Ebert were, you know, taking movies seriously, and it didn't seem like he took them as seriously. I didn't take him as seriously, but he was entertaining. He was a wit.
Yeah.
And, you know, people really loved him. He died just recently at the age of, what was he, 89 years old?
100.
100 years old.
He made it to 100.
Yeah. So he was on the Today Show since 1973. So he's a boomer favorite, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And another, somebody else passed away?
Margaret Carey. You don't know the name, but if you ever saw a cartoon of her, and there is a cartoon of her that's very, very famous, you would know her. The whole world would know her as Tinkerbell.
Oh.
She was the model and the inspiration for the Disney animators creating Tinkerbell. Now, this was like back in 53 is when it came out. So they didn't have stop motion capture technology then. They just actually had an actress in a studio, you know, in a swimsuit, and acting out the scenes of Tinkerbell, and they would draw, you know, sketches of how she moved and what she did and her facial expressions. So that was their, you know, motion capture of the day for Tinkerbell. But she was Margaret Carey, and she was 97 years old. She just died from cancer. She was born May 11th, 1929 in Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, there's the connection.
Yeah, she was adopted, renamed Peggy Lynch, and the family moved to Los Angeles when she was 3 years old. And she acted in, you know, some bit roles. She was on some TV shows. She was on the Andy Griffith Show, you know, the first season. She had some bit parts in that. So she had a career, but of course her legacy will be as the inspiration for Tinkerbell. And you know, she just died at the age of 97.
Oh, Peter Pan. I was named after that movie. My brother and sister had seen it, and they're like, oh, let's name her Wendy. And I'm just glad they didn't go with Tinkerbell. That wouldn't have been as great.
That can be your nickname. She was just 5'2", they say.
Oh.
So she was you know, she went and auditioned for the role. She did some pantomime. She knew ballet. So she just did some movements, and they went, you're hired. You're Tinkerbell.
You had to do a lot more back then in the golden age of acting. You needed to sing, dance, do all those things.
That's true. Yeah. You could not be a one trick pony.
Yeah. Now you just need a YouTube channel and you can really do whatever you want.
That works for some people. It sure does. Yeah. You're an instant star.
Well, thank you, Ron Brown. I'll let you know how Disclosure Day goes.
Do you either text or email or just give me a call or just tell me next Sunday.
All right.
Sound good?
Perfect. Thank you, Ron Brown.
All right, Wendy.
And Steve Dale, noted pet expert, is here. We're going to take a quick break and then say hello to him.
Hello. Oh, no, I have to wait. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's 720 WGN. To a daydream believer and a homecoming queen. I love the Monkees.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. And only one left.
I know, and I forgot about that. I thought Mike Nesmith was still with us, but
no,
he passed away also.
No, the Monkees are almost off the tree.
You would have been a...
I have no idea what I'm saying.
I don't either. you would have been a good Monkee. I could just see you
now,
like
you
being
that
silly and driving around in cars or being in a bed being pushed down the street. I could just see you doing that.
I have done it. Yes.
I knew it.
Yeah. I've got the most exciting news ever.
Okay, talk to me.
In the history of WGN Radio. And that is a part of what I'll be talking about after 1 o'clock on WGN. Get this. Ice cream and cats at the same time.
Hmm.
So there is going to be a benefit at Windy City Suites on Broadway in Lakeview in Chicago. For the Every Cat Health Foundation. And the first 50 people who come in on June 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. get free ice cream. And if you purchase anything, some of the proceeds goes to benefit cats.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that exciting?
Is there a cat hair flavor ice cream?
No. Well yes. It's called Calico Cream, I think. And if you go in there between now and June 16th, a portion of those proceeds goes to benefit also the Every Cat Health Foundation.
Oh,
and
that's
everything.
Good.
If you've ever seen a cat, if you've ever known a cat, even if you don't have a cat, everything truly from this organization that we know about cats was once funded by this nonprofit.
Oh.
It's an amazing organization. So, as an example, feline infectious peritonitis, easy for me to say, or FIP, had always been considered fatal. But we, going back, I say we because I'm on their board, but going back, and I've not been on their board that long, 50 plus years, going back that far, have been supporting investigations to better understand this very complex disease. And as a result of us understanding this disease, we've come up with a solution for cats that is now curable.
That's amazing to
me. And it was always fatal. Yeah. But what's more, that initial drug, remdesivir, became available for people with COVID. And no one would have looked at this antiviral if it wasn't for Dr. Niels Petersen, who did the research, and this organization for which I'm on the board, and also for cats getting FIP in the first place. And I had the honor of telling Dr. Tony Fauci this story, and he got it. He totally understood because he knew why, in a way I wouldn't understand, why this drug would work and is working for people to this day. Because COVID is still out there. So, and some people, mostly not, but some people get very sick still.
Mm-hmm.
And for those people, President Trump at one point in time was treated with this very drug, actually.
Is that interview with you and Dr. Fauci on WGNRadio.com?
It is. Yes, there are several I've done with him. But yes, it is available.
I know. You guys go way back.
Way back, yes.
He's on your board.
I wish he was, but no, he's not. But this is an amazing story, right?
Yes.
So anyway, on June 16th, we'll talk about it after 105. You can go to Windy City Suites just north of Belmont on Broadway and enjoy free, anything free, I'll be there. Free ice cream, and we will hear on my radio show more about this. But also, we are celebrating Navy Pier.
Oh, good.
The 4th of July is around the corner. So what are
they
doing?
Where is this summer gone? It hasn't even started yet, and it's almost over.
I know. That's.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. But it's kind of true.
Yeah, I know. I know it. But we will be talking about Navy Pier, and also the Ferris wheel is celebrating the 30th anniversary, some anniversary. That's a big end. You're looking out the window now at
the Ferris wheel. I'm looking at it because during the Bears playoffs, there was a Chicago Bear logo in the center of the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Eli, you remember that?
They have it there every game day. It's really cool to see when I'm leaving here after Hampton.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know.
But it got a lot of attention around the playoff time.
Yeah, I didn't notice it prior.
Yeah, I didn't know about that till this very moment.
Oh,
actually.
Really?
Yeah.
It was really cool.
We will talk to theater legend Jackie Taylor. She is the one who founded the Black Ensemble Theater up on the north side in, what is the neighborhood called? Anyway, it's right north of me. I'll think of it. It'll come to me. Don't worry about it. But she will be on the show talking about how she's changed theater, actually, throughout the country as a result of what she does right here in Chicago. We'll talk about they're celebrating their 50th landmark anniversary and what they are doing to celebrate that anniversary. We will also celebrate Gay Pride Month. the Chicago Shakespeare Theater is celebrating its a day of anniversaries. Their 40th anniversary.
Good golly.
As Brokeback Mountain. As
oh, I saw
their
that.
Show.
I didn't see the performance, but I saw that
the
it's
movie.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, the movie is, of course, different than the theatrical performance. And in many ways, this happened way back when to Marlboro men, right? You know, who realized that they were gay and fell in love with one another. And it wasn't the thing to do. In fact, you get shot for doing that. But I'll tell you, I was out to lunch, or dinner, rather.
You're often out to lunch.
My whole life I've been out to lunch. I was out to dinner with a friend from Australia,
uh-huh.
as well as another friend, and He was talking about this very issue. In parts of Australia, you cannot come out at all.
To this day?
To this day.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. So we'll talk about all that.
Ravenswood. Is that the neighborhood? Uptown?
Uptown.
Okay.
That's the neighborhood. Thank you very much.
All right.
I don't know why I couldn't think of that. It's just...
I don't know any of the neighborhoods.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to. I think I do, but apparently I don't. Angela Clay is the alderman. I know that much. 46th Ward. All right. So, one more thing. That is, I just gave platelets. When you give blood, mm-hmm. you could, so there's all these levels. You can give, red cell blood. You can give, power red, they call it. I don't know what that means. You can give platelets, which is what I do. And that helps people that are, oftentimes cancer patients, that need transfusions. And they get more than blood products. They get platelets too.
Where do you do that? At a hospital or a certain place? You don't have to give the exact details.
No, no,
but
no.
I'm
happy to. It's on Harrison, where I do it. It's the primary. It might be the only location to do that in Chicago. You do have to sit there for about 2 hours plus. But
can I be on my phone?
Yeah. Well, no.
Okay.
Because you can't. Because I can't explain it really well. But on one arm they take the blood out, and on the other they put it back in, or something like that. So you've got both arms that are... However, you could watch Netflix.
All right.
Or other programs, Apple TV, whatever.
That's great of you to do.
No, no, no. It's not about me. It's about the need to do it. And that's what we'll talk with the Red Cross about at about 2:30 on the show. We have a lot to do.
You do have a lot to do.
I know. It's very exciting.
I had one cat, and his name was Declan. And I went looking for a cat to adopt because I was living in an apartment that we weren't supposed to have pets, but it was easier to hide a cat. And I ended up getting him from the West Suburban Humane Society in Downers Grove.
Downers Grove.
And I went with a couple of my friends to look at this cat. His name was Adolf. I changed it. And
I'm glad you
yes.
did.
And the woman was going through my paperwork, and she said, you know, are you going to is your landlord okay with this? And I said, oh yeah, my mom's my landlord, it's totally cool. And they're like, okay, well, what's your mom's number? We want to give her a call. And I'm like, what?
Ooh.
I didn't have a chance to say this to my mom. And God love this woman. The way she worded it was, hello, your daughter's here and wants to get a cat. And my mom's like, what the hell do I care? I'm paraphrasing. But basically it was worded so it wasn't really asking permission or anything. And so I got Declan.
Cat.
And you know me. I'm glad that they go through but they check you out to make sure you're going to be a good pet parent.
There was a point in time, not all that long ago, where some shelters made it more difficult to adopt a pet, it seems, than adopt a child.
Yes.
That's wrong. And that's, for the most part, has been changed all over the country. So now, yes, you are asked appropriate questions because people do try to bring in pets. And they're going to land back at a shelter or out on the street if in the apartment they catch you and they don't allow pets. I mean, there are certain things. However, it's crazy to make it so difficult when we have so many animals that need homes.
Exactly. Good point. So that was my point, and I'm not trying to diss the Humane Society. There's new management there now anyway. But
well, yeah, this is a thing of the past for the most part.
And I lucked out. I got Declan.
Good.
My only cat that I'll probably ever have.
Why?
Because I have dogs.
Dogs and cats can live together.
Just like you and me. And Ron Brown with the news coming your way next from the Northwestern Medicine
Transitions,
Newsroom.
Yes.
Have a good day.